Test 1, 2, check, check.
All right, welcome.
Whoa.
Yes, that we're good. All right, welcome back, everybody. And for those of you who have been watching online, our apologies. We had a circuit breaker or fuse go, and so we lost power temporarily, but we're back. Hi, everybody. My name is Eric Poncelet. And with my colleague Ben Gettleman, we're from Kearns & West, and we've been invited to help facilitate the meeting today. Thank you for the cue. Our roles, basically, we've been brought in to help design these public workshops. There are 10 of them coming up over the next 3 weeks. We'll be facilitating them, and our role is really to help them be as effective as possible for everybody here. So to achieve the objectives, to have them managed in a way that allows everybody to participate and contribute in the way that I'm hoping you all came with questions and comments. So we will also be preparing for all 10 of these workshops a synthesis report, a summary, that will be capturing common themes and differences across all the workshops, and we'll be preparing that, and it'll be presented to the Parks Forward Commission at a meeting of theirs in the November timeframe. So another key role that we're playing. So I'm going to move on with, I think we've done the welcome and introductions, and just recap again what the main objectives are today. So there are a couple of main pieces here. The first is we're going to spend a little bit of time at the beginning presenting the Parks Forward Initiative. I'm hoping and assuming that many of you have already been to the website and know a little bit about it, but we're going to give a little bit of a refresher to folks. And then if there are some key questions, clarifying questions around it, we'll take several minutes to address those. And then we move into the meat of the day, which is really focusing on three main themes that are of particular interest to the Parks Forward Commission to engage in some public input and discussion with everyone here. And to help seed those discussions, we've invited some guest speakers to come and present some thoughts at the very beginning, and we'll introduce those when we get into the individual themes. And we'll do the first theme, which is the future success. We'll take a break around 3 o'clock, then we'll come back and finish up. And I guess I'm going into the agenda flow. There will be a break around 3 in the middle of the day, and we'll come back and do the final two themes, which are sustainable funding and partnerships at that point. And then we'll have some closing remarks. And then what we wanted to do was, in case some of you still may have comments to share or questions to ask, we'll finish the day in an open house setting where some folks who if you're done, you're welcome to leave at that point. But if you want to stay and ask additional questions to state park staffs or commissioners, you're welcome to do so, and we'll identify where the stations are for doing that. And that'll go until 5:30. So that's overview for the day. And I think the last thing we want to do in terms of intro is to just propose some ground rules for our engagement and interaction today. And these are really just intended to again, help make our time together as effective as possible for everyone. So we're proposing these to you. We want to ask everybody here to focus your input and comments on the objectives and focus of the meeting itself, which is the Parks Forward Initiative, and in particular, the three themes that we'll be addressing. We're inviting and encouraging input from everybody here. We also want to just recognize that this is the first of 10 public workshops, but we are accepting written comment and have been for weeks now, and we'll be doing so for weeks and months. And so that is, I think, the primary way by which members of the public and many state park staff have been contributing. And so we see these workshops as a supplement to that, and so we're hoping that you will be stimulated by what you hear today from each other and put those down into additional thoughtful comments moving forward. We're going to ask everybody, there are a lot of people here today, we're going to ask everybody to help honor the agenda, keep on track, and we may have to limit the amount of time everybody can speak in terms of how many people want to give public input, and we'll figure out the best way of doing that in a fair way. And we also want to, of course, invite respectful interaction, recognizing that there are many people in the room, that there are many perspectives and interests and different views, and want to ask you all to respect the legitimacy of those views and interests from others. And then finally, we heard the telephone ring earlier. If we could ask everybody to turn your cell phones off or to silent, would be greatly appreciated. So those are the ground rules for the day. Can we make those work? Does that work for everybody here? A couple of head nods. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so I'm going to turn the mic back over to Melissa Johnson, who's the Deputy Director of the Parks Forward Initiative. And again, we're going to do a brief introduction to the Parks Forward Initiative and then open it up for some clarifying questions.
Hi, I already introduced myself as Melissa Johnson. I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you to everyone for showing up during the afternoon of a work day. We really appreciate that. I'm going to start with a question. Is everyone really clear on what the Parks Forward Initiative is or means? I ask because it can be a little bit confusing. So I'm going to start with two knots. We, the Parks Forward Initiative staff, myself, Delbra Gibbs over there in the corner, and our executive director, Ken Wiseman, we are not state park employees. We do not work for the state. We're part of an outside entity, and I'll get into that in just a minute. Nor are we auditors hired by the state to investigate state parks. Instead, this is a collaborative project of the Natural Resources Agency, the Department of State Parks, and the Resources Legacy Fund. How many people here have heard of the Resources Legacy Fund? Oh, very good. Okay. So if you are not familiar, of course, you can go onto the internet and look them up. But just as far as this project goes, they are the main funder of this project. They are the ones, they serve as a through fare for six private foundations that are funding this initiative. So they are part of our team. They pay our salaries, Delbra, Ken, and myself. More importantly, they pay for outside consultants that we are using on this project for financial analysis and for deep data-intensive work. They very generously fund outside consultants and contractors, and we've already started with that work. So all of those people, the Legacy Fund, the State Parks, the Natural Resources Agency, we all work as a collaborative team. So the people you see up here, Michelle, Cedric, Kearns and West, and we're very happy to be doing these workshops in conjunction with the Park and Rec Commission, and we have the chair here today, Ernest Chung. We all share one goal, and that is to ensure that State Parks meets not only the challenges it faces today, but thrives into the long-term future. As most of you know, the State Parks General Fund has been severely curtailed in the recent past, meaning that the department employees have been asked to do more with less. They have done a valiant job, but often find themselves in triage mode. Does that sound right, Matt? Parks Forward is a much needed space to step back, take a breather, and think strategically about the future of state parks. To that end, the head of the resources agency, Secretary John Laird, appointed a 12-member commission, and they will be meeting for the first time on September 18th in Sacramento. That also will be a public meeting. The ultimate purpose of that commission, and we in fact have a Parks Forward commissioner here today, is to design and adopt a long-term strategic and, most importantly, an implementable plan for state parks. The commissioners are not paid. This is a volunteer job for them. Why would they volunteer for a year-and-a-half project? I think the answer is their passion for state parks. As our co-chair said, Lance Kahn said at the Park and Rec Commission meeting a few weeks ago, we cannot fail. They have passion for state parks and feel a personal responsibility. The commission will present its draft plan next spring, which is a short 6 or 7 months from now, and its final plan next August. The initiative staff, Delbra, Ken, and myself, will be staying on through the first part of the implementation phase to help with any bumps that might come up. Again, the idea is not to create a plan that goes in a binder and goes on a shelf. The idea is to create a plan that will actually be implemented. So how will the commission come up with their plan? We are going through a three-step process. We thought we would start with those folks that know the most about state parks, and that would be the state park employees. So about 6 weeks ago now, we did a survey. We got 950 employees to fill it out for us. Not bullet point, but long essays about what they thought we should be focusing on. We went from the survey to focus groups, and those just were complete last week. Kearns and West helped us with those. Out of those focus groups came the three themes that we are talking about today. So we've moved from internal state parks to the public. So we're very happy that you're here today to help us. The commission meetings are open to the public. They're webcast live. They'll be archived on the website if you want to be a part of that. We hope that all of you here will stay engaged through the process as we move towards a vibrant, healthy, and sustainable state parks. Thanks. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm not sure if I'll know all the answers, but I'll do my best. If you have a question, you're welcome to just stand up.
So maybe I can help describe this. So what we wanted to do, and this is prior to and different from the public input portions of the meeting that will be coming up soon, we wanted to take a couple of minutes. If folks do have questions where you're just confused or want more clarity around Parks Forward initiative, we'd love to see you raise your hand. We'll bring a cordless mic up for you. You can ask the question, and then Melissa or others on staff can help with responses. And we wanted to do this because we want to make sure people feel comfortable with what Parks Forward initiative is before we get into the rest of the agenda today. So any clarifying questions that folks might have? There's one over there. And yeah, we'll bring you the mic so that you can then be captured and it'll be on the video.
I'm interested to know if your process incorporates the idea of expanding existing parks or adding additional ones.
Could you repeat that again? You weren't mic'd, and so I'm not sure whether it was captured. And can you just confirm that the mic is on, please?
Testing.
Yep, it's good.
My question is, I'm interested to know if the initiative and process that you're bringing forward includes the idea of the potential for expanding existing state park units or possibly the creation of additional ones, mm-hmm. and how that would be accomplished and expanded funding as needed would be provided for within the plan. It's sort of feeling to me like we're planning for what it is that we have, period, end of story. So I'd like to know if there's expansion possibilities. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I can speak to that. I think at this phase of the project, we're really looking, everything is on the table. So we haven't come to the conclusion phase or the recommendation phase. We're really looking at, that's part of the purpose of this public workshop, and I'm glad you brought that up, is just that everything is on the table right now. I think that's what I would say about that, is that we definitely will be discussing that. And that speaks to the future of state parks, and that will also be brought up during the workshops, and that's definitely something that we need to talk about.
Okay, great. Thanks for the question. Other question over here.
Both your conceptual overview that's online and the Assembly Bill 1478 imply a broader scope of review by your commission than is covered by the themes you've selected for this meeting. For example, it's talking about preserving natural and cultural resources, mm-hmm. and biological diversity. What is the venue for making comments? Because sometimes there's a concern that you'll go too much into the commercial end instead mm-hmm. of forgetting the main purpose of parks. So what would be the best way to comment on those items since they're not necessarily fitting into the themes today?
Right. Thank you for bringing that up as well, because we only have a limited time. So we really tried to narrow down to the three themes that we thought are our partners and the public would want to discuss. But this is just one way to make your voice heard. So it's being here today and coming and making a public comment. We have written comment cards, but we're really hoping that people use the Parks Forward website. There's a section for public comment on that, and all of those comments will be captured for the commissioners. Yeah. So these are just some of the themes that we'll be talking about during the process.
Right, and if I could speak to that, the first theme was framed actually very broadly as future success, and so I think almost any topic that is important to you could fit into that first theme. So other clarifying comments?
I just have a question about the commission. Did you include all park users into the commission? I'm particularly concerned about equestrian use.
If you'd like to go on to parksboard.com, there's a list of all of the commissioners there, and they come from a variety of diverse backgrounds. We have 12 commissioners, and some of them are from the private sector, and some of them come from within state parks, from the National Park Service. We have all kinds of different representation. So I would encourage you to go on and look to see. And each of the commissioners as well will be open to public comment through the website. So if there's a particular issue that you want them to speak to, I would encourage you to do that.
Great. Other questions?
Hello, I live in Pescadero, and I noticed in your comments that I believe you said that you're going to step back and take a breather, I think is what you meant. Obviously, there are some things that can't wait. In Pescadero, we have a marsh, and we're on the verge of another fish kill in that marsh because it hasn't been properly maintained. So should we just address that in, you know, in this form and send it in that, I mean, will you be prioritizing things or moving things forward that should see attention? I would hate to, you know, see everything just put on hold until you come up with your plan.
I can speak to that. I think there's two issues to bring up. The first is that the Parks Board Commission is interested in long-term big ideas. So this workshop today, because we have such a limited time, is really to think about long-term themes that we can bring to the commission and not park-specific issues, if that answers part of your question. The other is that the Parks Board Commission is just one way that State Parks is addressing issues within. The director, Anthony Jackson, and his chief deputy director, Aaron Robertson, have their own strategic plan. So they're going forward quickly, and there's all kinds of progress being made within State Parks. It's not the State Park. I just want to be clear that State Parks is not waiting for the commission to come up with some sort of plan. There are various tracks that are going forward quickly. So if you have a park-specific concern, I'm not sure what's the right way to get that to your, perhaps that's a Park and Rec Commission issue.
We'd probably be doing a very good job in confusing you in that we actually have two commissions involved in the public workshops. There's a Park Forward Initiative, which has its own commission of 12 appointed commissioners. And Carol is one of the 12 here. We also, in conjunction with Parks Forward, we also have an ongoing standing commission, the California Park and Recreation Commission. One of the reasons why the Park and Recreation Commission is involved in the public hearing is we are the vehicle for seeking public input on an ongoing basis for all issues. And we also have other missions, of course, but one of our key missions is to hear from you and respond to your concerns.
Okay, thanks. Any other ones over here? All right, thanks.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you could clarify the role of the Little Hoover Commission and any other commissions that may be like that are apparently involved in this process.
The Little Hoover Commission, as I understand it, is a commission that was convened by the legislature. They created their report, which came out just a few months ago. That's separate from the Parks Forward Commission. That plan has been read and is used by state park employees and by the Parks Forward Commission. We're very aware of that commission, but those are two separate products and projects. So Parks Forward Commission is through an outside entity working collaboratively with state parks. The Little Hoover Commission, as I understand it, does investigations on all kinds of different state-related issues. And just this year, they did their report on state parks, but they're a body that's convened on all different state-related issues.
I can just add to that. The Parks for Initiative and the Commission is currently also looking at all reports and that have been done, audits, et cetera, that have been done on behalf of the department or for the department over the last number of years. So there will be, the Little Hoover Commission report will be one of a number of reports that will be looked at by the Parks Forward Initiative. Adding to that, just to address the question of things that are happening currently, Director Jackson has set forth a strategic action plan that is to cover the next 1 to 2 years, whereby we are all looking at immediate concerns within the department and allowing for a process to address those. Certainly the Parks Forward Initiative and the Commission will be looking at the results of what's being done simultaneously. So at some point in time, the Parks Forward Commission will be looking at all of these reports, all the actions, and all the commentary that's been given by the public.
Thanks. We have time for maybe a couple more.
I'm sorry, just in my ignorance, I'm thoroughly confused. Parks Forward's initiative is tasked to do exactly what, as related to States and Park, which is maintenance of existing parks, which doesn't have to do with Hoover Commissions, which is some other track. I'm getting lost.
Ernest, do you want to talk a little bit more about Park and Rec Commission and what it does and doesn't do?
Let me make sure I understand. It's a question regarding the Parks Forward Commission and initiative?
Yeah. No, versus the park.
Versus the park and... Sure. Park maintenance is an operational issue that it's handled by, of course, state parks.
That's all I needed to know about that. Mm-hmm. With regard to Parks Forward, what's its task? That's all I wanted.
To come up with a long-term strategic plan for state parks.
Okay.
So it's a little bit longer-term vision. Hopefully for the next few years, but well, 50 years and even 150 years down the road.
Yeah, I was going to say, could we pull up that last slide that had been up before? It does give an overview of the process by which the commission will be operating. So they have, I guess it's anticipated that they will have 6 meetings, and the first meeting is coming up later this month, the 18th in Sacramento. And they have then there'll be a follow-up meeting in November, another one in February. And at their April 2014 meeting, the objectives for them to actually roll out a draft plan that will be then prepared for public comment. And then with the idea that by August, and there will be ongoing public input and involvement during this, you know, throughout this whole period. And then I think they're hoping that by August 2014, they will have that final plan adopted. And I think the plan really is directed toward the legislature, toward the governor, toward state parks, and toward the public more broadly. But their work doesn't end just with the plan being adopted. They then stay on, and that there's an implementation phase where I think there will be deliberations going on in other venues, such as the legislature and the Parks Forward Commission will continue to track that, and we'll meet one more time in May 2015. So that's the arc of their work.
One thing to add to that, the legislature through AB 1478 set forth a mandate for the department to take a comprehensive look at itself, and this is fulfilling that mandate also.
Tell me, what reports will the commission be looking at, Little Hoover Commission? What kind of reports?
The question was, what reports will be looked at by the commission?
No, by the Little Hoover Commission.
kind of reports will they be looking at? Are you referring to the various reports that have been done on the department over the years? I'm sorry.
I can speak to that.
Oh, go ahead. I defer to you.
So State Parks has been wonderfully collaborative and open with us. So reports going back to the mid-1960s, we have some things that are typed on a typewriter. We have a library right now of reports that have come out of, everything from planning milestones to the little Hoover Commission, the new strategic plan that the director is working on, statistical analysis, general plans. It's all there. And it's all up for the Park and Rec, I'm sorry, the Parks Forward commissioners to read, and some of them have been summarized.
I'd just like to ask for clarification on the completion of the Parks Forward Commission report. To whom is the report submitted? Who has ultimate authority to either accept or to modify or even to reject the recommendations?
The commissioner's report goes back to the legislature. It goes to the governor's office as well. Through the Natural Resources Secretary, John Laird. But the commission was convened through legislation, 1478, through the legislature. So this report will then go back to the legislature for approval, and there will be probably some requests for funding somewhere in there. So that will have to go back to the state.
Okay, so I'm just noticing we have a lot of folks here, and I'm going to recommend we actually move on to our first theme. And I see some people sitting on the side. Are there seats available up top? Where there's some seats up top, it would be great to have everyone have a seat if possible. And you're fine. Okay. And there's one right up front in the middle. No one ever takes that center seat in the middle. Okay, so we're gonna move on now to what I think is why most of you are here today, and this is an opportunity to provide input on the Parks Forward Initiative and things that are important to you about state parks. And so we've organized this based upon, as had been described by Melissa, upon what has been learned from the survey and these focus group meetings within State Park staff. And there are three main themes that we'll be spending the rest of the day on. The first is future success. And so this is framed very broadly, and I'll read some the framing question and some focus questions about it shortly to help you get some ideas about what we're interested in here. But that's future success. I think that could handle, I think, the earlier comment about if you're very interested in things like resource protection. This definitely fits into that category. But we've also added two other ones that were deemed to be of particular interest, including sustainable funding and partnerships. And so we're going to do one theme at a time, with the idea that we'll take time for public input and comment around each of them, and then move on to the next theme. And we've developed some focus questions to help hopefully stimulate your thinking. And these focus questions definitely represent some of the thinking that is going on, early thinking within the Parks Forward Initiative, and even some input by some early commissioners. So here's the way the process is going to work. And I just want to acknowledge in advance that we didn't know how many people were going to come today, and so we're thrilled to see a packed house. And so we need to try to find a way to make sure that everybody who came and wants to share on a particular topic has the opportunity to do so. As you can imagine, we're not going to be able to have every person. If everyone wants to speak in the house, we won't have enough time to have everybody give a 3 or 5 minute comment. And so we're going to have to find a way together to make that work. And so I ask you guys to bear with us here. So this is the way that we're proposing the process. We'll move forward. For each of these themes, we have decided to I think, stimulate and seed the discussions by inviting some guest speakers to come by. And so we have some folks up at the table right here today who have been invited to speak on the comment on the first theme on future success. And these folks have been invited because they're long-term stakeholders who have been very involved with state parks for a long time. We've sought to have these guest speakers share a combination of regional, local, and statewide perspectives. And we thought that these initial speakers also, I think, could bring important perspectives and bring important information to help simulate folks' thinking. And so they're here as early speakers, but we obviously want to hear from everybody in the room. So the way the process will work is we'll start with them, and they'll have four or so minutes to initiate our discussion, and then we're going to open it up to whoever else wants to speak. And what we'll do is I will actually ask for a show of hands on each theme of how many people want or are interested to come to the mic and to share a comment on that. And then based upon how many hands are shown, it's going to give us an idea of how much time we can give everybody. So I don't think with this many people in the room, everybody's going to get 3 minutes, but depending on how many hands we get, we'll allot as much time as we can. And then once we allot that amount of time, that will help inform how quickly we get through each theme discussion. In terms of indicating your desire to speak, we have speaker cards, mm-hmm. and Michelle has them over there. And so once we get to that point, I will ask folks to raise your hand, and if you want to speak, that you will give you a speaker card. You put your name, your affiliation, and contact information if you're able, and then you'll hand that back in, and then we'll essentially set up a queue of people, and we'll run through those speakers one at a time. As I mentioned before, that we have our identified some focus questions that we invite you all to speak to if you're interested. If what you're most interested in providing comment on is different from that, that's fine too. And then finally, if at the end of the day you feel like, wow, there are certain things you wanted to say and you didn't get to say them, we have a couple of things we can do in those cases. One is we do have written comment forms that you can fill out right now with your written comment, and please hand those in. Alternatively, you can go back home afterwards, and you can go online to the Parks Forward Initiative website and fill out the comment form there, or you can send an email to the Parks Forward Initiative, and we'll show all that information at the end of the day today. In addition to that, and I mentioned that we're going to be doing the open houses at the end of the day, we have one station here which is focused on if you have any additional questions about the Parks Forward Initiative. But out in the hallway, we have a little flip chart up on the wall for stations 1, 2, and 3. And if there's a comment that you want to share there as well, we invite you during the break, for instance, or perhaps afterwards, to write a comment on a sticky note and put it up on that flip chart, and then when we go into the open house, we can engage in discussions around there. So we just want to create as many opportunities for folks here as possible to make sure that everyone has a chance to provide their input. And if you do fill out a comment form, we're asking everybody to hand them to Michelle. Michelle, again, if you could raise your hand at the end, so she'll be collecting those. So that's an outline of how we're hoping to go through this today. Again, we're going to do our best with everybody in the house today to make sure everybody has an opportunity to speak. And again, reiterate that these workshops are an early opportunity for the public to provide input, but it's by no means the only opportunity. And we're really using the written comment format as the primary way that we'll be soliciting comment over the coming months, but obviously today in person is a great opportunity as well. So I'm going to introduce the first theme at this point, and then we'll essentially go back over this process here. So the first theme is future success, and the general question that we frame in order to, if you have, you're like, what do you mean by future success? We're asking everyone here, you know, what is working well and what is not working well, and what key improvements could be made to ensure state parks better meet the needs of all Californians in your region? So we're inviting especially folks here today to, if you have special ideas that are regionally focused, we're very excited to learn about those. So that's the main question, very broad. We also have identified a couple of focus questions that we want to just raise for your consideration. And to the extent that these resonate for you and you'd like to speak to them, I think these have been identified as especially of interest to the Parks Forward Initiative. And so the first one is, how would you characterize those groups currently using the state parks in your region and those groups of potential parks visitors that are underserved or underrepresented today by your state parks? So a second focus question is, what types of parks or park services, facilities, programs, and activities are required to meet both the needs to meet the needs of both existing and future visitors? And a final focus question is, under what conditions and by what criteria should any new state parks be created or acreage added to existing state parks? So again, as you're pondering what you'd like to speak on, if it's to one of these three questions, focus questions, that would be of a special benefit. So with that, as you're pondering whether you'd like to provide input, we'd like to again seed this discussion with a couple of invited guests. And here we've invited two folks who are at the table. We have Bill Leahy, who's the executive director of the Big Sur Land Trust, and Sandy Hale, who's the president of the board for the Point Lobos Foundation. And perhaps we can start with Bill. And I think we've given you guys around 4 minutes or so to to share. I know it's a tight assignment, but for everyone else in the room here, it's a very difficult assignment of trying to get everything in a short period of time. And once these two invited guests have spoken, I'll be asking for a show of hands of who want to speak, and that'll help us figure out how much time we each get at the mic. So, Bill, please start.
Thank you. Thank you for bearing with me. And, of course, 4 minutes for me, those of you who know me, is extremely challenging. Sandy's going to back clean up and hit on things I miss, I hope. So I work for a land trust, Big Sur Land Trust, and I'm just going to share briefly the story of our organization, where we're going, perhaps to serve as a parallel. And I'll preface my remarks by suggesting that the challenge that we face is the same one state parks face, and state parks is beautifully positioned, really, to play a major role in addressing the key challenge of the future, which is how do we take care of land, how do we steward it, how do we pay for stewarding in the long run, and how do we excite, attract, and inspire people to get involved in that mission? That's something we've taken very seriously. We have a new mission to inspire love of land and conservation of our treasured landscapes. We're leading with people connection now, actually putting more resources, time, and staff into this whole idea of people connection. We know our success demands it. One of the things I've been invited to do today is to provoke some thinking. I'm going to suggest that the key challenges facing our conservation movement are that we're an aging white movement that is going to have to become a brown and young movement or perish. I think we have to understand how to do it together. The challenges, of course, facing our world today, you name it, are just too vast, too huge for any one organization to do it alone. In Monterey County, we share the similar diversity of the state of California writ large in terms of communities of color, agriculture, ranching, wealthy people, tourism, hospitality, all sorts of landscapes, and yet we still are a community in many ways divided and not finding ways to work at the edges of our communities and find new solutions. I think that's a big challenge facing all of us in the conservation community, and state parks, I think, has a great role to play in modeling that. How are we going to do that? I think we need to expand our notion of what preserves or sanctuaries are. Historically, for our organization, it's been fairly pristine open space or nature-focused. I think if we broaden our definition a bit and think about sanctuaries for people to come together and share stories, share traditions, reconnect with what's important in community. We can use the success of the last 35 years to really build something far more powerful. I think we also need to recognize that our 35 years, I say 35 years because that's how long we've been around, the land trust, we've been successful at buying land. Because of that, we've become very visible. And it provokes the question, well, who are you buying this land for? Why are you protecting it? That's a big challenge for us, and we're taking it seriously. I think another how is we have to move away from kind of what I call hub thinking, like we're the hub, to we're just one node in a vast sea of hubs, or vast sea of nodes, if you will. And that's a change that all of us, each of our projects, our places on the land, can serve community in very different ways. We better be open to that and figure out ways that, you know, every state park perhaps has a different role to play depending on what community it's in. And I also think we need to think carefully about how, because we could get lost and try a million things and not get anything done, what are those important portals of connection that we can build on? In our case, we're focused on young people, arts, culture, history, communities that have not been served by the land conservation in our community, food, And those are just a few, but those are the ones that we're really interested in seeing how we might build connections to people and conservation through. Some examples quickly of work we're doing, we're collaborating with the Ventana Wildlife Society to develop curriculum at a number of our properties. And we've learned in the implementation of that curriculum this summer that actually the partners we work with, they change the curriculum as we implement it. So it's very dynamic. You know, there's not sort of a cookie-cutter approach to how we connect people to landscape. We are looking at our stewardship projects as opportunity for connection. We have a number of projects now where we're working with Hartnell Community College. Students are actually engaged in while they're learning and getting their certifications, projects, real-life skills on the landscape. How do we open our lands to be centers of stewardship activity and stewardship learning? We are focused, this summer we completed a season of 6 weeks, 8 weeks, excuse me, of summer camps, collaborating with partners, all working on challenges in East Salinas. So Youth Orchestra Salinas, Monterey Jazz Youth Program, First Tee Salinas, Girls Inc., and so on. Each of those partners, we've learned, brings a whole bunch of really good ideas on how to get kids inspired and excited and connected to landscape. I'm reaching my end point here. So those are just a few examples. We're also partnering with, I need to mention a number of the ranchers in our community, looking at ways that public lands can serve as places for learning and connection around our important land-based economies. So challenges to wrap up, it takes a long time. This is relationship-type work, not transactional. And that's really tough for organizations, even small organizations like ours that are used to very top-down, hierarchical, boardroom kind of decision-making processes. Giving up control, sharing funding, sharing the spotlight, allowing and being willing to let the community have a lot of influence over what activities take place and how they're implemented is a real huge challenge coming down the road. So in conclusion, I think, you know, the great challenge facing us in our time is how do we grow, how do we support the long-term stewardship challenge, and how do we do it in a way that inspires and connects people? And I think State Parks has a major role to play in that. So thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you very much, Bill. Okay, all right, Sandy.
So I'm going to say, first of all, that Bill and I did not compare notes first, but it's going to sound like we did.
We're partners.
So I'm from the Point Lobos Foundation. Point Lobos, first of all, is a reserve, so there's an important stewardship and maintenance and a pristine state kind of a function for state parks, but it's also a place that serves a lot of visitors and where we really try to inspire visitors. So that's where my comments come from. I'm going to quickly hit on first question, and that is that our underserved population is very much the same one Bill talked about. That is people of color from the Salinas Valley, particularly from Marina and Seaside. We have, I was out there as a docent this morning, and as is typical on almost any day I go out, there were many more international visitors than there were visitors from Salinas. We get very few. We print brochures in many different languages. Interestingly, Spanish is one that's not picked up nearly as much as many other. You know, we probably put out more brochures in Hebrew than we do in Spanish. So that's a sense that somehow we're missing an important part of our main population. The kinds of changes we would like to see from our perspective, first of all, most important is we would like to see state parks return to interpretation and make a much less effort. We feel like interpretation has been pushed out of the way by public safety, and that may be important at Huntington Beach in California, but it's in Southern California, but it's not nearly as important here. We really think the idea of inspiring, especially youth, is particularly important, and state parks has missed a tremendous opportunity by letting at least one, maybe two generations go by without the kind of inspiration. You know, I grew up where we look forward to being around the campfire with a ranger. We just don't have that kind of experience anymore, and then we bemoan the fact that people don't support state parks. Well, I think there's a causal relationship there that's really important. Even if there weren't, it's important to return to interpretation. I understand from state parks that you can afford two interpreters for every one public safety officer So let's double our interpreters. We won't go there. Secondly, as Bill talked about, most of the things that we want to do, we really need to do with partnerships. One of our strategic plan, our very highest priority is outreach to youth, again, in the Salinas Valley. We do that through the schools, through the library system, and so forth. In every case, the people that can both get the kids there and also embed it in the curriculum or whatever are the school districts, the libraries, the Boys and Girls Club, a whole host of partners, the Ventana Wildlife Society, Big Sur Land Trust itself. We're not going to do it ourselves. Right now, down the road, we hope eventually to have a residential science camp across the street from Point Lobos. And we're going up, or actually one of our persons that's here is going to go up to Whidbey Island to look at such a camp. But we'll never run it. We won't be the operators. We're not going to be the ones that have the curriculum. We just want to see it happen for the people that come out. A need for new revenue and cost models I'm going to skip over simply because I've got comments, but we'll return to them when we return to fiscal sustainability, except for one thing to say, and that is that what we see, we really applaud the fact that State Parks is trying to get a better handle on its budget and have more transparency. At the same time, the way they've done that have undercut incentives at the local level to engage in entrepreneurial or other activities that would generate new kinds of revenue. So you have to have incentives in place that really, at the field level, encourage people to take a risk and try new things and develop new revenue sources consistent with cultural preservation, natural preservation, and so forth. One comment which some of you, well, we'll see. We have across the street from Point Lobos an area almost twice as large that the Big Sur Land Trust acquired and was transferred to State Parks 20 years ago this year. What we would like to see called A.M. Allen Ranch. Nothing has happened on that property in 20 years other than the fact that there's new ranger housing and a new, septic system to take care of the ranger housing. You could argue that the management now is probably worse than it was 20 years ago, although the good side is that it was safe from development. Perhaps it's time for state parks to look at different stewardship models. Maybe in that case, conservation easements would have made a lot more sense than outright purchase. And whenever the question at the end was, what new property should we take over, it would be nice to see state parks look down the road at what the end game is going to be and how they can afford to get there. And if they can't, maybe they need to back off and stay with what they have.
All right. Sandy, thank you very much. So. So I want to thank Bill and Sandy for speaking as our initial speakers today, and you served as guinea pigs for the rest of everybody in terms of how to respond to this question about the future success of state parks. So Michelle is handing out speaker cards right now, and if you'd like to make a comment, please raise your hand and she'll share one. And what I would like to do is ask for a show of hands right now of people who would like to speak to this item in particular. So even if you've filled one of these out already, raise your hand again. We're going to do a count. And Ben, can you help me with this? So I see about 15 hands up. So 16. So what I'm going to propose, because I think some people may want to raise their hand later, is we're going to do 2 minutes per comment, and we're going to use the timer here just to try to make it fair for everybody. And so the way it'll work is that Michelle will keep bringing me up these speaker cards. And what I'm going to do is ask in groups of 3 or 4 or 5 people, folks to come up to the microphone podium there and stand in a line. And so we have folks up there in line and ready to go. And then we'll go for 2 minutes and invite you again to share your thoughts on the big picture theme and to speak to the focus questions if that works for you as well. So we're going to start with, I think it's Mead Fisher, Irene Lennox, Bob Inea, and then Owen Lawler. So if you guys can come up in that order and stand behind the mic.
Okay. I'm Mead Fisher. I want to address question number two, what types of parks and park services? Well, having visited most of them, there are so many different parks that offer so many different things. For example, some cater to hiking, bikers, picnic people, people who are looking for cultural information, and people who are looking for natural history. I think before you make any long-term plans, you should basically categorize each park by, is this heavily for hiking, or is it heavily for natural resources, whatever, and once you've rated them, then it's going to be much easier to develop the kinds of activities and programs, because what's going to go for Henry Coe is not going to work at Point Lobos. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. And of course, if I didn't say it beforehand, would love to, when you come up, please give your name and your affiliation, and then you can go. Okay, next, please.
Name is Irene Lennox. I'm probably speaking more for myself than for any organization, though I do actually act as contact for the Sierra Seniors Hiking Group locally. So I have an input on that as well. My particular interest is in the first point, and that is widening access. And I think the main problem here is finance. And I don't think that's recognized enough in the parks issue. When you start charging $10 to park your car to go to a park, when you start asking for $200 a year in order to get a pass that enables you to go frequently to the parks, you are discouraging those who are on limited incomes. And that particularly, I suspect, affects the families of color, families with young children, the very people who are least making use of the parks at the moment. I'm horrified by the way in which the cost keeps going up. I'm fortunate that because I belong to the senior hiking group, we can always car share, we can go as a group, and then it doesn't cost us so much to park. If we each had to pay $10, then I suspect we wouldn't be going every week as we do at the moment. We'd be going less frequently. Cost is a major item. And I draw your attention to the difference in the European model here. Coming as I do from Scotland, I'm very aware of the difference both in access to the beauty spots of Scotland, where even though they are privately owned, they are accessible to everyone, on the one hand, and also looking at the art side, museums and such like, they tried an experiment in Britain of bringing in charges for museums, and suddenly overnight they decimated their membership. People did not go when they started charging. You have to look at this. If you're looking at access, cost is a major issue. If you bring the annual $200 down to $50, you might get 10 times as many people giving you $50. You have to think of it in terms of broadening the base, not increasing the cost. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Irene. Thank you for being so timely. So we have Bob, Inea, Owen, Lawler, and then Lynn Paulson and Alan Carlton. Good, Bob.
Hi, my name is Bob Ania. I'm the president of the Monterey Bocce Federation. I believe it was in 1969 State Parks took over the Custom House Plaza at Monterey's waterfront, and at that time they absorbed the three bocce courts that had been established there and maintained by the city of Monterey. Since that time, these courts have not been maintained by the state parks. The players have to maintain them. And they've deteriorated to such a terrible situation that this past weekend, the Festa Italia Santa Rosalia was held in Monterey, and the bocce tournament, which has been going on for 25 years, it took 4.5 days to prepare three courts for tournament play. And so the situation there is untenable in terms of attracting and maintaining new bocce players because they hate to play on the courts because they're in terrible shape. So what we suggest is that the Monterey Bocce Federation take over the operation of the bocce courts, and we ask that the state parks refurbish and renew or resurface the courts with a synthetic surface that will last 20-25 years and enable us to hold tournaments as well as league play. We had to cancel two tournaments in May and July of this year because the state parks wanted to charge us $800 a day to have these tournaments. And a lot of people were very disappointed over the cancellation of those two tournaments. They love to come to Monterey, but they hate to play on the courts.
All right. Thank you, Bob. All right, Owen.
Good afternoon. Owen Lawler, I'm a land use consultant. I just want to speak briefly here. First of all, thank you for taking on what I hope does not become a thankless task of trying to address this issue. My thought when I looked at the website earlier and thought about this is that my thinking is that probably given the scope of what you're undertaking, you might want to look at models that are already in place that work instead of trying to reinvent the wheel. And one that comes to mind when I thought about this was the Presidio Trust. And what an amazing, when people said it would never work and how now it's working. If you could look at the entire state park system in the context of perhaps something like that, I mean, the possibilities are actually limitless. And so, but it requires a framework because it's amazing in the first five speakers, we've brought pretty much every elephant in the room already. Okay. Obviously, we got to conserve with incredible natural resources, but to have a fundamentally sound financial system that this functions under, leveraging the resources that obviously one of the greatest state park systems in the world. I mean, it's actually breathtaking to think about. So, that's all I'd say is try to develop a framework quickly, and try to see if you can move that framework to gather momentum on a statewide basis. And good luck.
Right. Thank you, and I think I can say that the Parks Board Commission is very interested in models that work, and so we invite you shared one with the Presidio, but if you have other ideas of models, please do share. All right, so we have Lynn, Alan, and then Jillian Greensight and Jean Brocklebank.
My name is Lynn Paulson from Washoe Meadows Community, and I really appreciated the themes that the speakers brought forward about stewardship and connectivity to the landscape. And one of the issues that I've seen is that there are too many park properties without general plans. I believe there's about 90. And it allows them to be vulnerable to development by commercial interest or mismanagement by state parks. And it puts the park resources at risk. It also decreases the park's visibility and accessibility to the public. An example is Washoe Meadows State Park in Sierra District. If you've never heard of it, that's in that category. So thank you very much for considering this.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn.
Hello, I'm Alan Carlton. I'm the state chair for the Sierra Club for state parks, and we intend to be very involved in this whole process. We represent hundreds of thousands of people in California, members of the Sierra Club, and very concerned with all our parks, including our state parks. I think one thing we have to remember is that state parks are not just a place for people to go and have a good time. That's a very important part of it. The other part is they are a great, huge national resource. We've got 1.5 million acres of state public land, which is a huge state asset that we have to take care of. This encompasses forests, redwood groves, watersheds, wildlife refuge, and as a natural resource, is a very important part of the success of state parks will be protecting and taking care of this natural resource. Second, I'd like to reiterate what was said earlier. Another important part, if you're going to get people to the parks, it has to be affordable access. And I think she's right in the sense that when you start talking about $10 to go to the beach, that's a lot of money. And I know campsites are expensive, but we have to consider that we can't just make the financial sustainability of the parks based on just the charging more and more to the users. And I think when you get to the financial problems of the state park, I think you have to tell the legislature that part of the problem is the legislature. There are various problems, but one thing is the legislature has consistently underfunded the state parks for a long time, and one partial solution is for the legislature to step to the plate, say, we've got this great asset, we've got to take care of it, and we've got to adequately fund it, like the $1 billion deferred maintenance. And with regard to that, I suggest that one possibility might be some kind of bond. Now, obviously, bonds maybe are easier to pass than other things, but when we start thinking about that, that kind of thing is true, but also the legislature's got to step up to the plate and do their fair share. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ellen. All right, so I have Jillian, followed by Jean, followed by Lori Eddings, followed by Rudy Hernandez.
Thank you very much, Jillian Greenside, and thank you very much for this opportunity. I really appreciated what Mr. Lay, Mr. Hale said about making our parks more attractive to communities of color, particularly youth of color. And I think the partnerships with the schools and the libraries and everything you outlined is key in that. I also think it'd be important to look at the diversity of staff in the state parks, and I don't mean just at the maintenance level, where you do see more diversity, but at the ranger level, and if you're thinking of more interpretation, I think that's important. I did notice you talking about moving away from law enforcement to more interpretation. My son got his start in California State Parks. He now is a ranger with the Florida State Parks, which is mostly interpretive, and they do not have a law enforcement. However, everybody deserves to be able to go to our state parks and have the reasonable laws enforced. And so if you're moving in this direction, I hope you will not move away from a law enforcement direction. I'm a California naturalist, and I also volunteer with Otter Watch. I'm not speaking on behalf of that, but it gives me the opportunity to go to all our state park beaches up and down the coast. And what I've observed is a high level of illegal activity with dogs running off-leash on all our state park beaches. There's also a serious problem with mountain bikes going illegally into our steepest trails, and this is creating a very serious problem for safety of all users. And so I think that you cannot move away from that level as you move forward. I think right now there's a lack of enforcement. I understand personnel problems, but I think it's also a question of attitude and seeing it as an importance. I hope you'll keep that center stage. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Jillian.
Hi, I too thank you very much for being here today. And I noted what Mr.
Could we get
Hale
your name, please?
I'm sorry, Jean Brocklebank. I had noted what Mr. Hale said also, and Bill before him, about interpretation and public safety. And I'm going to probably even say a lot of what Jillian before me just said, reminding you that the California parks are for the people, every age, my age, people more older than I am, children. The parks do not exist for our domestic pets. And I also think that we must, in terms of interpretation, we have to have those special resources. I am a biologist by training. We have to have the resources in order for them to be interpreted. And if we allow those resources to be degraded, they're no longer available to even be interpreted. And regarding public safety and enforcement, I also encourage you not to back off from enforcement just because people feel entitled to violate the state park rules. And I, too, have noticed, I live here in Santa Cruz, that off-leash dogs are everywhere and are increasing, and they do pose a public safety risk, especially to children who are right at the level of the dogs. So I encourage you very much, no matter what you may hear from others who say they are an off-leash user group and have a right to the state parks, to hold, as you go forward, to hold those thoughts. Please maintain the no-dog off-leash policy at this, all state parks, including the beaches. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Jean. We have Lori, please.
Yeah. My name is Lori Eddings, and I am a docent interpreter at Seacliff State Beach. And I just want to speak about education with classes, with school classes, field trips. We have served now, last year, thousands of school children at Seacliff, but we are very limited in our resources of our staff ranger interpreter hours. We are very much helped by friends of Santa Cruz State Parks. I thought maybe Bonnie Holly was here. Are you here? She's here. They help support us, but I know now, too, that they have taken on the mission, because the state was going to ditch the mission. And therefore, a lot of their funds are going to the mission, which also helps an awful lot of children, school children. We certainly need to educate California children about the mission and about what's out there in the ocean, in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I'm also a docent for them. And I just feel we are really hamstrung by the amount of ranger interpreter hours we're allowed to have. We're closed on Monday and Tuesday in the winter. Our children come from underserved areas of the Pajaro Valley and all over our local area. Some of our children who live not 5 miles from us have never been to a beach. So we want to welcome them. We want to have the hours to have them there and possibly even be allowed to open on the days that the park is the visitor center is officially closed to invite them, because we did that a couple times last year very successfully. But some schools need to get 100 kids together to get a bus to come. Other schools, the parents drive. But the underserved need our help to get there. So we hope that you have a separate division ready to deal with educational issues. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Lori. All right, we have Rudy, and Rudy's going to be followed by Dave Mitchell, Lisa Ravasio, and Chuck Huddleston.
Good afternoon. My name is Rudy Hernandez. I'm a native California, Hispanic, and I support and use our state parks. I would like to encourage the efforts that you are now making in terms of incorporating the minority communities of California as you look at the future of California's park use. Just look at the demographics of our student populations. And you may even want to include the student population in terms of seeking out advice as to what they may see in their future. As far as concrete type of suggestions, in Spanish they say, el perro baila pa'l dinero. So, in other words, people are going to come if it's something that's affordable for them. As far as affordability, I think we were on the right track when we were looking at doing something as far as vehicle registration to try and fund our parks, probably something that wouldn't be as expansive as some of the ones that went forward, but maybe a $5 fee. I know the Hispanic community has always supported its schools and other efforts that cause money for them, and I think they would support that type of effort. Also, I believe that we would go a long way towards getting more minorities to come to our state parks if we increase the number of facilities that are available for them to do the more common thing, which is picnic, fire rings. We lost a number of fire rings. I hope that we can come back and put more of those in. Also, that a lottery system be created so that people who want to go into those park for RVs have a chance, not just the people who are on their computers at 12:01 on a certain day. Thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, thank you, Rudy. Dave.
I'm Dave Mitchell. I'm representing the California Council of American Society of Landscape Architects. I've also, my first job happened to be with state parks up the coast here at San Mateo Coast State Beaches. And the key for us is to protect these facilities to make them available for all of the public. I've worked in the public side as a public practitioner in the field of landscape architecture, which means that I've dealt with budgets for the City of Santa Barbara, the County of Santa Cruz, and currently working for the City of San Jose. Without having a defined financial source to support state parks, like the Parks Foundation wanted to do with the $18 fee, you're always subject to what the legislature will do in the way of the budget process. I understand that very clear in the organization I currently work for, which is the city of San Jose. We actually do have capital money, but we don't have maintenance money. And therefore, we have cut our maintenance staff down by a third, just like you have done. And when you start cutting, then you start reducing the facilities that are available for the community to use. And that's what you're hearing here, is that there are facilities that were there in place in the state parks that have been removed because there isn't the staff there to maintain them anymore. The key issue is for us as part of this group will be really to look at that financial sustainability of what state parks can do and how it can be funded in the future.
Thank you very much, Dave. Alisa.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and contribute our input. My name is Alisa Ravazio. I'm the founder of hipcamp.com. It's a website to help people find campsites in California state parks. I'm here to highlight a couple awesome opportunities the internet is offering us today. The first is that the internet is the key to reaching younger generations, the underserved communities, the communities of color. All these people are online and accessible for a relatively low cost. Worth pointing out, these are the people who will need to be protecting our parks in 50 years. So definitely agree with all the great points to make action to involve them. My second point is data. And by data, I think the best example there is the gentleman earlier who made the excellent point about, you know, categorizing parks by activity. It's an awesome idea, but it would be expensive to do it from the top down. But if you look at the internet, there are already people writing reviews about what parks are great for on Yelp, on TripAdvisor, on Google, everywhere. It would be a rather simple move, I think, for state parks to start collecting this data and building an open source data set that will be a huge asset for the future, extremely valuable, and something that generations will enjoy for a while. That's it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Alisa. Chuck. Oh, hey, by the way, after Chuck, I have John McGuire, Tracy Huckle, and Elaine Rolfes. Chuck.
Afternoon. My name is Charles Huddleston. I go by Chuck. A little potpourri of thoughts here for you. On the Poppy Pass, I have a Poppy Pass. It costs me $125 a year. It's the best entertainment value in the state of California. I keep it tied to my jacket because I ride a motorcycle, which is going to be another one of my points. I think it'd be a good idea to advertise this a little bit as the best entertainment value in the state of California. I get into the state parks for like about $2 a day for parking by using this a couple hundred times a year. I recommend you have a student pass, a student parking pass for the parks to increase engagement on the part of our young people. As regards motorcycles, I look at your state park maintenance pool and I see all these giant gas hog trucks driving around with people kind of lollygagging, talking to each other. I recommend you sell about one third of them and buy motorcycles, particularly for your maintenance, not for your peace enforcement officers, and maybe a few electric motorcycles for your game wardens so they get on the trails and cover more territory and catch some of these poachers and so forth. And in terms of that, in terms of penalties, the $400 dog thing, ticket for off-leash dogs, basically just encourages the wardens not to want to get involved because nobody wants to go slap an elderly couple with a dachshund with a $400 ticket. Drop it to 100, drop it to 75, but enforce it. Every time you see a dog loose, don't think, oh, no, I can't do that. I think you should have a better liaison with the tourist and visitor centers, advertising the parks to people the minute they come into town. We have 13 parks in the city of Santa Cruz, and I don't see them advertised as a tourist destination for people. That's a few of my thoughts. On the tax thing, make it one license fee per family, not per vehicle.
Thank you, Chuck. John.
Hello, I'm John McGuire, and I'm representing the Friends of Lighthouse Field. And the Parks Department works in a natural resources code kind of a situation. Two of the code items are that the Parks Department cannot sell property at less than market value. I'd like to see some legislation that would change that, even to giving property away. The other is the Parks Department cannot allow dogs in a park situation, off leash, I should say. There should be some guidelines so that people have some process to change that in a certain area. Some suggestions for that change might be, can the area be fenced? Does it need to be? Are specific hours needed for off-leash dogs? What are the environmental consequences? Does the local government support the use of off-leash? Is there a grassroots organization available to assist in the management of the area? Is opposition opposition organized and realistic? Can a compromise between opposing groups be developed? And what would a reasonable appeal process be? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. All right. We have Tracy, and Tracy's followed by Elaine Rolfes, Katie J. Milena, and Drew Perkins.
Thank you. My name is Tracy Huckel. My husband and I have an outdoor recreation website called Hill Tromper. I'm here today to ask the commission, as it moves forward, to consider viewing state parks access as a public health issue. In a time of huge health costs and rampant obesity and stress-related illness, state parks provide a place for physical exercise as well as mental and spiritual renewal. With that point made, I have two requests. The first is that the commission make a top priority of keeping parks access affordable. As others have pointed out, $10 to take a two-hour hike on what is supposed to be public land is too much money. If state parks winds up ramping up enforcement on parking or access fees, then I hope it does so only in concert with lowering those fees. I would also suggest investigating zoned passes, something like a year's worth of entrance to five parks for $35 or something like that. And my second request is that the commission consider broadening parks usage through zoning or conditional use permits to allow more events and popular activities like mountain biking and even, yes, off-leash dog use in certain places, whether it's determined by place or time. Limitations would be debatable, but I think we need to expand access for people and widen the base. A third point is, I think maybe any kind of partnering you could do with transportation, with public transportation, would be a good thing, because many of the parks, by definition, are far away from urban centers, so it's hard for people to reach them. Finally, the more people use the parks, the healthier we become as a society, and the more support the parks will have at the ballot box and at the pay station both. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jason. So Elaine. And again, Elaine's followed by Katie, Katie J. Milena, and then Drew Perkins.
Thank you. My name is Elaine Rolfes, and I'm representing myself and other dog owners and an organization called LULA, which is Live Oak Off-Leash Advocates. And, okay, so I'm going to read what I have written for you all. And I put down here, Santa Cruz County has 29 miles of beach front, and of those 25, half belong to the state parks. So, and a high percentage of Santa Cruz County residents are dog owners, and many would like to enjoy to take their dog off leash to the beach for physical and mental health of both the dog and the owner. If state parks would allow this on two or three state park beaches in Santa Cruz County, perhaps with time constraints, for example, before 10 and after 4, it would be a wonderful way to share the public space with the tax-paying public. And it would also be a revenue, could be a revenue source, and a way to encourage enforcement of other county ordinances, such as dog licensing and spay-neuter rule. If folks had to pay a reasonable fee, like daily, monthly, yearly, or whatever, to have an off-leash access at designated beaches and or times, I know they would do it. And I know that the state parks has the Oceano Dunes, where off-highway vehicles are permitted from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., and there is a charge or fee to be paid to be able to do this. So why not do a similar program for dogs off-leash at specified beaches and times?
I will first suggest Lighthouse Field and Beach for a starter, and add perhaps Rio Del Mar or New Brighton State Beach to spread out the off-leash access to different parts of the county, north, middle, south, for example. That would help the traffic-wise and congestion-wise. So those are my suggestions, and I thank you for your time.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Lynn. Katie.
Hello, my name is Katie J. I mostly go by Jay. I am a local here in Santa Cruz. I'm representing myself. I'm an avid cyclist, semi-professional cyclist. That's kind of what I do. And I just want, I know you guys might not be local to here, but I want you to know that in Santa Cruz, cycling is a major industry. We have a lot of really big, well-known international companies. And as a state park user, I'm basically a criminal. So I'm speaking here as a criminal right now. There is a great new trail here in Santa Cruz called the Emma McCrary Trail. It is on a city park land, and I think it's a excellent opportunity to kind of move that forward into the state park land, where we don't need to run rampant all over every single trail in the state park. But if we can have some well-designed, challenging trails that are built and maintained by locals and funded by the industry, like Santa Cruz Bicycles, Ibis, Specialized, they want people to ride their bikes, so why not make them pay for the trails? That's already happening in places like Downeyville. If you guys have ever been to Downeyville, their entire industry, their entire economy is built on mountain bike tourism, and it's working, and the trails are maintained. So let's just have that here in Santa Cruz or in other places where you want to attract young people, people who are very active, they want to get out into the parks, and let's not have them be criminals. Also, one little thing, I am a dog owner, and you know, there's not every single person wants to use the park that as a traditional family unit. We don't all have kids. Dogs are part of our family, and for responsible dog owners, we should be able to use the resources that are we own. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. And Drew Perkins. Okay, great. So we can wait till later. So we have a little bit more time. Are there others here who would like to speak to this first theme, future success? So we have a gentleman over there. If we could, you guys can come on down. It'd be great. Oh, we have some Michelle. There's some folks over here too. If you can, it's also great for us to have these speaker cards. So we have your names, and we have this for the record. So yeah. So if you want to speak, just thank you. Super. Raise your hand, and Michelle will get you a card. And Drew will speak later. And Grant. Grant is up next.
Yeah, Grant Wiesman. Yeah, I just wanted to ask the question of Sandy here, how the reduction in public safety over interpretive activities makes sense in the light of the such depredations as the expanding illegal off-leash dog use. Now, since you've all come to Santa Cruz, I'm going to get this very specific because this is a big problem here. And Lighthouse Field State Beach, where a unique setting, and Santa Cruz is unique in its the beaches that it has, and it's why people come here from all over the world, basically. But also unique to us is the cessation of enforcement at Lighthouse Field State Beach. And we've talked to Chet Bardo, our local ranger here, and he seems to think that the enforcement is happening, but provided us with statistics which prove that no, there is no enforcement happening, even though the rangers have to drive by Lighthouse Field State Beach every day on the way from Natural Bridges or Wilder down to the harbor and the public beach there, or Seabright. So my question is, does this loss of public safety on our beaches, is it warranted? Why are we being singled out? And why, when you consider the mathematics of bringing off-leash dogs on a beach, it's not simply an addition to the people who are there. There's a subtraction process that takes place, too. People who are offended by having to watch dogs laying excrement and urine all over the beach, These people leave the beach. People who are concerned about their public safety, such as the 5-year-old who was attacked at Rio Del Mar Beach, just down the way, very close to a state park beach. This is a serious concern for public safety. And I thought it was interesting that the previous speaker brought up the subject of off-highway vehicles. There really is some sort of a parallel here with off-highway vehicles and the public safety threat that they present and off-leash dogs. And I hope that you will go forward and consider these implications of this in your future studies. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Grant. All right, so I have Monica Hudson, followed by Greg Herkin, followed by Lydia Turner, followed by Lyndall Erb. So, Monica.
It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Monica Hudson. I am speaking for myself, and I would like to bring up an issue that's probably relevant for any unit in the state park system. Sandy Hale of the Point Lobos Foundation touched on that, and that is that funds are often raised in park units through special events, and I highly recommend that those funds go back to those parks where they are raised, which is not the case right now, which will encourage and motivate the people in those parks to keep generating extra funds. A quick word about law enforcement that's been brought up earlier. It costs a lot to keep a cop on the beat. Most of the public doesn't know whether you're maintenance man, your PI, your interpreter, your person that takes the funds at the entrance, whether he's a ranger or not, or she for that matter. And people will respond to a person in uniform, and often it's the eyes and the ears which bring law and order, not necessarily the gun. So I'm all for having more interpreters out there, people that are visible. And that would also help with the dog issue because it's all an education matter. And they would be there to contact people. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Monica. Greg?
Yeah, well, since the issue of dogs has already come up, this actually has something to do with partnership and finances as well, but I thought that I could segue perhaps into that as well. I represent an organization of over 1,000 Santa Cruz residents who are dog owners, responsible dog owners, and who hope to return traditional off-leash recreation to its beach. I won't go into the background of that. You may know that for many years, off-leash recreation was allowed at its beach, Lighthouse Field State Beach, for the hours of before 10 and after 4. That ended in November 2007. So what I really want to talk about here is basically how we have partnered. We at Friends of Lighthouse Field have already partnered and are willing to partner in the future with state parks. Since 2007, even though we've been denied access, legal access to the park, we've partnered with state parks and two other local organizations, the Santa Cruz Chapter of Save Our Shores and Take Back Santa Cruz, to carry out the cleanup of both Lighthouse Field and its beach. We've removed hundreds of tons of garbage, unwanted sleeping bags, other evidence of illegal camping, drug needles, and in one case, a clip of 9 millimeter handgun ammunition. In addition, in 2010, we purchased and state park installed a stainless steel drinking fountain adjacent to the restrooms. Again, this was fully at our cost, not yours. In 2011, a full fundraiser raised more than $2,000 for the repair of the concrete steps going down to its beach, which had become a safety hazard. The state did not have funds under the Great Recession to do that repair. We did that repair. Actually, 5 contractors, local contractors, came forward, did the repair at no cost to us, no cost to the state, but under the direction, in fact, of the state. We also installed, purchased and the state installed, a dog bag dispenser at the top of the stairs that was damaged twice. The state put the post holding it in 6 inches of concrete. Vandals nonetheless removed it. So you can see the depth of feeling about this. Basically, we're willing to partner in the future as well.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. So I have Lydia Turner, followed by Lyndall Erb, followed by Carol Carson.
I work as a maintenance worker for state parks, but I do not represent them. I'm speaking my own personal opinions. I am so excited to be a part of state parks and see the enthusiasm of our community, both in groups and in individuals. People have a passion for our land, and I do too. I want to thank a couple comments that said that maybe we shouldn't continue to add to our land and our properties, and but rather maybe we need to take care of what we already have and get them in a good condition. I also appreciate the fact that people have said that education and interpretation are very important. I believe that should be a part of every employee of state parks, that the ranger should be able to answer questions and invite the public's questions, maintenance, interpreters. I've seen interpreters sit behind a desk and not be out with the people. Not that they don't have their time with them, they do, but if we had someone near the bathrooms, you would meet everybody who visited the parks. That's the joy of being maintenance. We get to speak to everybody. I sit in one ranger station that no public can come to, and I sit in another that many public people come to, but there's nobody in there working, only two docents that come for 8 hours a week. So I think we do need to answer people's questions, and they want to learn. Many people don't understand why they can't bring their dog to the beach. It's to save an endangered animal. But if they knew that and they loved animals, they would understand. And I agree. There's too much. It's too expensive to go to some of the parks. We need to bring more people and allow at least a free day or a free time.
All right. Thank you, Lydia. So I have Lyndall Erb and then Carol Carson, and I think that's all we have on the list.
Hi, my name is Lyndall Erb. I am a director with Bay Area Barns and Trails. We're an organization that is bent on keeping horses on the trails. And one of the things that I have noticed in a lot of planning is that there isn't planning for horse trailer parking at the parks. There are a few parks where there is good parking and a few parks where you're really iffy if you can even get in there. And most of the trails are open to horses. I mean, there are places we can't go, but that's all right. I accept that. But I think that as part of the planning, please take into consideration the parking lots and at least parking for a couple of horse trailers. I tried to organize a ride with one of my riding groups one time, and I was told it would cost us $50 a trailer to park in the state park parking lot. That sort of cut that off. I think part of the thing is to think about all the users, and you know, everybody can get out there on the trails, and we'll work to help you whenever we can. And you might think about putting your rangers back on horseback.
All right, thank you. Carol Carson.
I'm Carol Carson, and guess what I'm going to talk about? I'm representing all of the dog owners of California who would like to avail themselves of state parks. I'm a nature rider, and for the last 5 years, I have received a grant from the San Lorenzo Valley Water District to lead walks on educational environment through the San Lorenzo Valley watershed. The only time I can ever have people bring their dogs, and I always have to remind them, is when we go to Loch Lomond, which is owned by the city. And thank God for the city, because they used to be in control of Lighthouse Field, and since that no longer happens, and Bucky and I, that's our favorite place to go, there are no longer any dogs over there. I, as a 66-year-old female, this year I came across a drug sale right there in that park, and I didn't know what was going to happen to me. You know, I didn't know if they were going to attack me or what, but it's very hard to go through that park anymore with all the homeless people. The other thing is that I went to Utah one time to go rafting down the Colorado, and I went to the Dead Horse Canyon State Park of Utah, where they let me take my dog and go anywhere I wanted to. And I said, boy, I can't believe this, because where I live in California, we're not allowed to take our dogs anywhere. I would beg you to give us some more space to take our dogs here in Santa Cruz County. We have no place to take them. I live right outside of Big Basin State Park, and I have never been there because I will not pay all that money to go to a park where the only place I can take my dog is on a paved road. I can do that where I live. I have begged Cowell Park to allow dogs along the river, but they only allow horses, which cause sedimentation. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Carol. So we're at the end of theme one here. Just want to recognize that we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we'll be addressing two of the themes that some folks have spoken to a bit already. The first will be sustainable funding, and the second will be partnerships. And I just wanted to reflect on some of the many things we heard now and want to appreciate everyone who spoke. We heard several comments on the topic of affordable access, the need for state parks to look at, for models that work. And we, again, invite your input on those. The importance of state parks in their role as stewarding natural resources and the incredible state asset that is. The importance of having sustainable funding moving to the future. I anticipate we'll hear a lot more about that after the break. Just highlighting the importance of interpretation and education enforcement as some key functions that are addressed by state parks, and the challenges of addressing new, younger populations and lower-income populations and how that's going to be done in the future. And then finally, one we've heard a bit about is expanding uses, including addressing dogs off-leash. So that and much more. So thank you very much for that. We're going to have a quick comment, then we'll take a break.
I want to, before we break, I want to take a quick minute to introduce Ken Weisman, who just joined us, and Ken is the Executive Director of Parks Forward.
Thank you, Ernest, and I apologize that I was at a funders meeting, but I did bring water and some snacks with me, so please help yourself during the break. Thank you.
Great, so we're going to take a 15-minute break. We'll reconvene at 3:10. All right, folks, we're going to get started again. And AGP, if I could ask you guys to go to the PowerPoint. Oh, yep, perfect. So had one of the participants today came by and said that she had noticed that there were, it seemed to her, very many either current or past employees or folks who have worked for state parks. And so I just wanted to maybe see a show of hands of folks who are here who have worked for or work for state parks. Okay, great. Yeah, volunteers as well, yes. Both, wow. Yeah. Thank you. So thank you for your interest and for coming today. So we're going to move into the second two themes, and the next one is on sustainable funding. And we'll do this the same way we did the first theme on future success. And we've invited some folks who will come and make some presentations, again, speaking to this theme and speaking to some of the questions we have here, which I'll go over in just a second. And then we'll open it up to everyone as well. And just want to give everyone a heads up that it's possible after a comment made by one of our guest speakers or by one of the members of the public who presents a comment that you may get a follow-up question or clarifying question from some of the initiative staff here. Because there are definitely certain topics that it's already known that are very big and strong interest to the commission and the commissioners. All right, so moving on to sustainable funding. So the overarching question that we wanted to pose today and ask for your reflections on is what should be done to ensure the long-term financial sustainability of state parks? And we actually heard some comments on this in the first theme. And recognizing this is not a simple question, a very difficult to resolve. And so we're very interested in your insights and your ideas that can be built upon here. We've also identified a couple of focus questions that we'd also invite you to respond to as part of your comments, and I'm going to read these. The first is, should state parks aim for self-sufficiency, or should it always receive some dependable level of support from the state? And if the latter, what state park functions, in your views, merit at least some state funding? So that's focus question number one. The second is, what is the right mix of funding sources for state parks among those available, including general fund, taxation, user fees, service and concession revenue, corporate, and philanthropy? And then finally, what specific significant opportunities are there, in your views, to reduce costs, increase revenues, or otherwise prioritize spending within state parks? So these are questions that are of particular interest to the Parks Forward Initiative and to the commissioners as well. So invite your input. So to help kick off this discussion, we've again invited three invited guest speakers to help seed our discussions with their views. And we have Reed Holderman, who's the executive director from the Semper Virens Fund. We have Andrea McKenzie, the general manager from the Santa Clara County Open Space Authority. And finally, we have John Koberer, who's the CEO of the California Parks Company, a concessionaire. And so I was going to suggest we start with Reed and then move our way from left to right here.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Before I answer the three questions, I'd like to preface my remarks by saying that it's essential that the state of California, with the help of this commission, agree on the size of our California state park system and make the case that Californians pay for it. I think this is going to be very challenging, because we've had several governors who have threatened to close parks and sell off parts of the system. And I think if this commission could link a bond act or a tax increase with a constitutional amendment that the park system, as we all agreed upon, is what it is, then and it will never be broken up or changed, I think you might actually get the voters to support something like that. I also think it's important that we eliminate the backlog of deferred maintenance, which is set at something like $1.3 billion and rising daily. This is the monkey on the back of the state park system, and if you expect them to make forward progress, we have to address that deferred maintenance backlog. It's keeping the system down and diminishing the visitor service, the visitor's experience, which is our base constituency for approving bond measures and tax measures to support the system. And thirdly, I think and I know we need a pathway for non-law enforcement personnel within the state park system to rise up to the supervisory and executive levels within the system. These are people that devoted their lives to state parks, as have the law enforcement people. They should have an equal shot at managing and running the system, which we all love and care about. And I think if we do these things, we will create an enduring system that will provide refuge and a place for underserved communities of color, which do not have safe places to play and recreate. And they're as Supervisor of LA, Gloria Molina, told me, their backyards are too small for their families, so they have to go to state parks. It will provide a component to the solution for our public health epidemic by providing outdoor places that people care about and visit and enjoy. It will provide places of inspiration and beauty that artists and writers will write about and talk about. I mean, can you imagine Thoreau writing Walden Pond without Walden Pond? And it will help our local communities who depend on state parks to generate revenue within their communities. As far as the questions themselves, self-sustainability, I mean, yeah, you'd be crazy. Sure, it's a goal we should all strive for. And many parks are striving for, but not all parks are created equal. Some have the ability to generate revenue, and they should, and some don't. And we just have to be very real about that. I think in the case of our work at Castle Rock, we are creating a business plan right now that talks about future cost, future revenue opportunities, and we're trying to get to a place of self-sufficiency. Will we get there? I don't know. It's a great goal, but let's be real that this is a public benefit that should be supported by the public. The right mix of funding, well, that sort of depends on each park, right? I mean, come back to the old, let's do a plan for each park and figure out what the right mix is. When I was in Canada this last summer, we went to the University of British Columbia, their botanical gardens, and they had a canopy walk. That canopy walk was a lot of fun. It generated a ton of money for the botanical gardens. And it was a great way to educate the public about not only the trees, but the ecology of the area and see it from up on high. There's a lot of things like this we can do. I mean, I could name 20 of them right now, but I think we can catalog what's available, but they don't apply to each park. At Venice Beach last week, there's a the zip lines. They had a zip line on the beach. I couldn't believe it, right next to Muscle Beach. So, you know, each place is different, and there are revenue-generating opportunities. But don't be fooled to think that that is going to take the monkey off your back. I mean, you're running a system that's big, has lots of infrastructure, lots of visitors, and the public should pay for it. Opportunities for reduced costs? Well, there's always opportunities for reducing costs. I worry when I talk about this particular topic because a couple years ago when Post and Semper Virens conveyed Little Basin, a 535-acre property next to Big Basin State Park, the only way the Department of Finance would agree to do this is if we left a $1.5 million endowment behind and provided a stewardship or a concessionaire vendor and transferred the vendor along with the endowment. You can't do that at every park. That's an unrealistic expectation. The bar is way too high for other parks to do that. But right now, that's the current thinking in Sacramento, at least at the Department of Finance, that if you don't have an endowment to cover all the expenses for the next 5-20 years, we're not going to accept it in the state park system. I think that's personally ridiculous. The other thing, when I was at Trust for Public Land, we built a lot of inner-city urban parks. When I ran the Western Region, we built 16 in California. And we built probably 10 times that in New York City. And one of the interesting things we learned is on these small urban pocket parks, having a steward at those parks actually saved us money. And right now the conventional thinking is you pool your resources, you send them out to all the different small parks, and they service them with a ranger, with a maintenance worker, with a water quality tester, with an interpreter, and then you spread them around. And that's a system that's worked very well for the department. But one model we should take a close look at is what happened in New York City. By having a steward there on the premises, they built a connection to that park, they maintained it very well, and they saved us money. And I think David from San Mateo County is here, and that's a model that they use as well. Having one person do all things will get you 90% there. In closing, I just want to say that I do see a future where we have plenty of funding, that our parks are well maintained, and that every person that enters it has a good time, builds a connection to it, and agrees to support it, so we're not in the situation 10 years from now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Reed. So our next invited guest is Andrea McKenzie, the general manager from Santa Clara County Open Space Authority.
Thank you very much. So I'm here representing an independent special district, an open space district, and we have actually quite a few of them in the San Francisco Bay region. We're very blessed to have that. So in many ways, I'm probably representing my sister agencies around at the Bay region today, our perspectives on funding and partnering. With my own open space district, we've been around since 1993. We have a very modest source of funding, $12 per parcel for those parcels in our jurisdiction. Probably the one thing that distinguishes from state parks in that respect is we can always rely on that, even though it's not an adequate source of funding, it's always there. Each county around the Bay region that has an open space district, a local conservation partner to state parks, has its own source of funding. So when I look at your right mix of funding sources there, we ought to be talking to each of our counties and our open space districts about what kind of funding source they use and how we partner with them. Like state parks, our open space districts are faced with how do we manage open space lands, how do we acquire more land, how do we respond to growth and climate change. So funding is the largest limiting factor in what we can do and what we can provide to the public. Many of the open space districts place a super high priority on partnerships and coordination with nonprofit organizations, other public agencies, increasingly the private sector and the business community. I just wanted to share with you some of the things we're doing as a local open space district that may have some benefit to state parks. We're doing a comprehensive conservation and stewardship vision for Santa Clara County right now. We're not trying to protect it all. We're not trying to do it all. We're looking at the areas where we can most strategically invest with our partners figure out what our niche is. I know the model in the past has been a siloed approach where each public agency goes for its own source of funding, does soup to nuts for its public lands, and I think at least locally and regionally we're saying, how can we share responsibilities? How can we share services? And what do we do best? We're also trying to build the case that our open space and parklands provide significant economic value and return on investment to our communities through the natural services they provide. Water quality, water supply, flood and fire risk reduction, public health, we heard a little while ago, and adaptation to climate change. Those have an economic benefit, and that benefit can be tied to certain funding sources. We're also looking at how we can use different types of land protection tools. We don't always have to buy land. We can use conservation easements or some type of stewardship incentives more effectively. We know to secure public support and funding, whether it's at the regional level or the state level, we're going to have to do some things. And one thing we're going to have to do is demonstrate as public agencies that we're coordinating our efforts, that we're efficient in our use of public funds and the use of the best conservation tools for the money. And as we heard a little bit earlier, in terms of raising funds, we have to convince an increasingly tax-weary public that our open space parks and natural resources are the smartest long-term investment that will pay dividends for the health and sustainability of California. They're not just a nice thing to have when the times are good or we can find money in the budget. We have to find a way to isolate that and find the funding for it. In terms of sustainable funding, I think we all agree there's no silver bullet. We have to look at multiple funding streams and coordination between the state, the region, and the local agencies. We also know there may be no new normal. So how do we work more collaboratively and holistically when it comes to funding? And some of the things we're starting to look at include the following. Payments for ecosystem services, the use, creative use of fees from habitat conservation plans for acquiring, enrolling, and managing high-priority lands. There will be regional and local conservation measures on the ballot in the coming years, to be sure, and those should be coordinated with any funding that state parks seek so we can work closely together. One thing I don't see up there in the right mix of funding sources is transportation and water infrastructure measures. There'll be significant federal, state, regional, and local funding coming through those infrastructure sources, and there has to be a recognition that our parks and open spaces are providing some type of infrastructure, green infrastructure, that benefit our transportation and water systems. And then most recently, we've all been looking at climate auction revenues as a result of AB 32. I would love to see a dedicated portion of those cap and trade revenues going to stewarding our park system in California. Piggybacking on what Reed just said, while we can look at philanthropy and private sources and fundraising and so on, which we need to supplement, we need to have some reliable level of public funding for resource management and park infrastructure. I think that's unquestioned. And then leading toward opportunities to reduce costs, that comes down, in my mind, to collaboration and coordination with your local and regional open space and conservation agencies and land trusts. We're already buying thousands of acres of land in California, which we thought would be turned over to the state park system, and instead is being held by us and being managed by us. But let's start to look at how we manage lands. We're neighbors. The animals don't know the jurisdictional boundaries between state, county, and local parks, and actually neither do the public. I've had state park friends, park ranger friends, tell me, talking to the public, when they ask them what your favorite state park is, they say Yosemite. So I think with recognition of that, we have to really start to work together more in kind of landscape units of state, regional, and local agencies working together. And one of the ways that I think that plays out is in public safety and vandalism. I think we all know there's been a proliferation of illegal marijuana grow operations that are causing all kinds of resource challenges and public safety challenges. Let's work together on those kinds of things and help fund those together. So I would say, as an open space district, we protect and steward land and natural resources on the regional level, but it's in our best interest that state parks and the state park system is healthy and well managed, and so we have a stake in that as well. So let's work together on all of these funding sources together. Thanks. Right.
Thank you very much, Andrew. And our third guest speaker is John Kober, CEO of the California Parks Company, concessionaire.
Thank you. I'm going to read this so I can stay within my allotted 5 minutes. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly about the future of the California State Park System. My name is John Kober, and I am the CEO of the California Parks Company, which operates within two state parks, Angel Island and Big Basin Redwoods. I'm also president of the California Parks Hospitality Association, which is an association of all the major concessionaires in the state park system. The work you have here is important, as it involves the sustainability and enhancement of the finest state park system in America, if not the world. And I personally thank you for your time and dedication to this very worthwhile and necessary effort. You've asked me to speak for 5 minutes on three subjects. This is hardly enough time to cover just the tip of many icebergs. However, I'll try to spark your interest in probably what will be some controversial areas. The first subject on self-sufficiency. I believe it is justifiably, to some degree, the latter, which is with a great degree of tweaking to eliminate the overdependence on the general fund. The existing system for funding has been a failure. I think it's one of the main reasons we're all here today. Overall, public safety, some streamlined high-level park administration and planning, and major infrastructure-oriented maintenance functions are deserving of continuing public general fund support. All other functions, including costs for general park operations, including some lower-level public safety functions, fee collection, interpretation, daily maintenance, janitorial, and other areas can be covered by a variety of sources, which is the subject matter of the next two subjects. What's the right mix of funding for state parks? I think the people of California have again and again shown their disapproval of the taxation alternative. It is not viable, at least for the various renditions that have been put before the voters to date. Increased user and service fees on a targeted and strategic basis, similar to private sector practices and private recreational venues, should be more aggressively adopted. For example, charging more for weekend dates and more desirable campground spaces and less during the less used times. This program has already been started by the department. There exists vast potential for much greater concession fees through avenues presented in the answer to subject matter number three below. There exists substantial potential in sustained annual corporate sponsorships, but it will take a very professional approach and a reassessment of what is really appropriate in state park venues. Philanthropy has hardly been tapped. Again, a targeted, highly professional approach needs to be undertaken in this area. There are multiple avenues available, including the huge potential in estate planning efforts aimed at our wealthiest 1%. Your question failed to mention support from nonprofit organizations, which are a very rich source of both financial and human resource support. They should be encouraged to do even more. Subject number three, what specific significant opportunities are there to raise revenues and reduce costs? I think herein lies the greatest potential. Number one, the private sector has the potential to assume many additional functions within the parks and do these things at 30 to 50% less than current government costs. This has been well documented in many experimental management cases in other state park venues. Number two, concessions and park professionals at each state park unit where a business opportunity exists need to sit down together each year and develop a business plan for the unit that addresses all the potential revenue and cost reduction opportunities that are achievable. This process needs to be driven from the very top, where a new business and marketing department provides expertise and direction to the field. Congratulations to the director in his initiative to have already found a highly capable person to lead this department. Number three, begin to amend the culture of state park management, beginning with the reduction of the reliance on certified law enforcement park rangers for overall park administration. More skilled and entrepreneurial-oriented on-the-ground park management should be put in place. Too many great revenue and cost reduction ideas never see the light of day because of an overly protected management culture and too much bureaucratic red tape. Number four, marketing needs a complete overhaul. Social media and website management for the parks needs to come into the 21st century. Parks need to unleash the unlimited created potential of the private sector in this area. And number five, other changes in operating standards would include a reassessment of how bus and charter tours are managed, a streamlining of the special event process, more alternative lodging in campgrounds, better automation of the fee collection process, including incentive agreements with the private sector, and a more facilitative process in negotiating any extended contracts for capital improvement projects with current concessioners. In conclusion, what I have presented will take some major shifts in current policy and an iron resolve to battle existing bureaucracies and old, worn-out management standards. Much can be accomplished without the degradation of the resource of this magnificent state park system. However, a different mindset will be necessary. Thanks for the opportunity to comment.
John,
thank you, John.
You mentioned appropriate partnerships. What do you think is appropriate?
What do I think?
Appropriate sponsorships.
Oh, sponsorships.
Yeah.
Well, I think there are huge vendors like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, vendors of all sorts that supply their products and services to the state parks, and these people could be approached for exclusive contracts and would pay a significant amount of money to have that kind of thing. And then there are just other more charitable organizations that have corporate departments of giving that want to be associated with the state park system and see some benefit to them in the long run with their business interests. So I know the state parks has tried this a number of times, and there were some wrinkles that just couldn't be worked out. But I think with some perseverance and a very, very professional approach to some of these larger corporations, it is a doable thing.
Good. Thank you, John. Thank you, Andrea, and thank you, Reed. So a lot of, I think, thoughtful and stimulating ideas in there that I think this is exactly the kind of input that will be appreciated by the folks working for the initiative. So we want to broaden it out now to other comments from folks here, and I have a number of speaker cards, but could I get, again, a show of hands of folks who are sure they want to speak this time around? And so we have...
One thing, and while you're doing
it, please hold your hands up because we want to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right, so if you haven't filled out a speaker card, keep your hand up and Michelle will come. And Ken, you had something?
Yeah, and Reed, I wanted to follow up with you and Andrea about a comment. I came from a meeting today with the folks funding this, and I think it's, although we've always said everything's on the table, they're pretty uniformly that the goal here is not to close parks or to sell parks. That's just not what this group wants to do. But it's also to say, how do we best use them, and what's an appropriate new park look like? Has your organization talked about what the park of the future looks like, and how would we prioritize?
Well, we have an application in Santa Cruz County to build the park of the future at Castle Rock. That'll have a green building, net zero energy consumption, LEED certified, and be appropriate entry point for the Silicon Valley into the Santa Cruz Mountains. And I think there's a lot of other examples out there of the parks of the 21st century. But the point I was making is to link some type of guarantee that you're not going to, I'm not saying this group of professionals or funders are going to close the state parks, but the last governor had suggested close, the current governor suggested closing 70. Governor Schwarzenegger suggested closing several. I think Governor Davis had proposed closing state parks. You know, the public who votes for refunding of the state park at a level that's appropriate to keep the system operating may want a guarantee. That was the nature of the comment, that no one's going to tinker with it. If we put up the money to keep the system going and keep the best it can be, the envy of the world, right, don't start pulling the pieces apart again on us.
Oh, and your point was that may be a campaign point that would perhaps gather support.
Yes, I think the linkage might be very beneficial for the department.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I just add quickly that the 21st Century Park and Open Space looks like a multi-partner protected land or landscape. Some of that land actually may be an active production of some kind where the public actually interacts with what's actually happening on the land. Some of them, the areas maybe is off limits. Some areas are open for recreation. And the partners that come together for those facilities are really good at what they do for their respective roles. And the funding sources reflect that. One of the problems with siloed approaches is then you have to look for one source of funding to do it all. And I think if we bring partners together for these different pieces, we can tap into different funding sources.
Yeah, and when I mentioned Castle Rock, just on Andrea's point, it is a family of partners. The Castle Rock Foundation representatives are here, Planet Granite, REI, other NGOs, other foundation funders, private donors who actually helped us cobble the $250,000 so the Castle Rock wouldn't close. I mean, this is just not one organization. It's a family of people that really want to keep a special place open and sustained over long term, and they are your natural allies.
And was that easy to do?
Nothing's easy. We know that.
All right. Thank you again, Reed, Andrea, and John. And so we do want to open it up to other comments from participants here. And given the number of speaker cards that we've received, I'm going to recommend we get into 2 minutes as we did last time. And I also want to leave a little bit of space in case there are follow-up questions coming from Parks Forward Initiative staff. That gives us a little bit of time. So I have, as the first suite of speakers, Sean Wilson, Dave Cudi, Dave Vincent, and Alex Peabody. So if we can ask you guys to come down. Are you Sean?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Hello. So again, when you speak, please give your name and your affiliation.
My name is Sean Wilson. I'm the owner of Epicenter Cycling in Santa Cruz. We have two locations. Both of them are conveniently located at the base of Nicene Marks and Wilder Ranch State Park. So we are a big part of the cycling community here. And there's a few things I like to agree on and some comments. I totally agree about focusing on the niche in each area. The niche in Santa Cruz is bikes. That is your answer for a lot of what we're talking about today. Getting all different types of ages in the parks. I'm probably the youngest person here. And I know that most ages ride bikes. And if you want to get everyone into the parks, you make bicycle-friendly trails, it will be your answer for sure. I also think that if you have a bicycle-specific trail, people are willing to pay for it, which is your income that you're looking, your revenue that you're looking for. These people are willing because they're willing to throw down money. I'd say $10 a day to ride. If it's all year, people will pay over $100 to ride. This is the type of community that is willing to pay for pleasure, and in the long run, I think it'll bring money to a lot of areas. But focus on the niches. I think the Bay Area is a lot of bikes, but if there's a niche in each area and it's a bike friendly town, build some bike trails, and you will get a lot of revenue coming in. A few other things here. I also believe if you have bicycle trails, the local advocacy group, a lot of times, were willing to spend the time and energy to generate funds to pay for these trails. So I think that'll help a lot to reduce your costs. And then the last thing will be partnering with bicycle companies. We talk about these big companies like Coca-Cola. Well, in a niche area like Santa Cruz, you deal with bicycle companies, multi-million-dollar companies. They're definitely willing to help out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sean. The next speaker, Dave Cudi.
Hello, my name is Dave Cudi. I'm representing myself, although I am a member of Mountain Parks and a docent at Henry Cowell Redwood State Park. I was a former Silicon Valley employee. I was an engineer, manager, and an executive there. And I look at state parks and look at it as a business. Who are my customers? What do they want? How am I going to serve them? And can I only serve those that provide profit? And that's really the crux of the problem. It's easy to draw up a list of things that people want. It's easy to figure out how much we can afford. They seldom meet. And so I really believe that libraries, museums, and state parks ought to be free. Now, that's really hard to achieve politically, and yet that's what we really want, is we don't want to have the underside of our society held back by a lack of access to those kind of resources. And, you know, I work with children, school kids. One young boy, just loving it in the park, and he says, well, gee, I've never been in Redwoods before. But his teacher says he's never been to the beach before. He lives 1 mile from the beach, and he's never been to the beach. And it's because those resources are just too far away. They're just unimaginable. They're too expensive. And if you really want people to take advantage of our park, we want to have our society do the things that it should do, then we've got to provide that access. And it's going to be extremely complex. And I think I agree with Reed. Politically, it's a long battle, but we have to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. So Dave Vincent.
Right. Start?
Yep.
All right, good afternoon. My name is Dave Vincent. I'm retired state park superintendent. My last assignment was here in the Santa Cruz District. And I wanted to talk about sustainable funding because that is the Achilles heel of almost every parks department out there. So often we start down a road, we make progress, the funding's pulled out, and we feel like we're spinning our wheels. So this is an absolute critical issue to the department. I would like to just share with you some thoughts on, often when we take a look at parks, we begin to take a look at their economic benefit, and we almost do that park by park. And I'd like to share like a different insight through my experience with state parks. The first thing we typically do is we pick the low-hanging fruit. We take a look at the revenues that the park generates, the concession agreements, the leases. We might even get into the number of employees, both permanent and seasonal, and provide some economic multipliers for how much that money comes back into the community, those kinds of things. Those are simple kinds of things to take a look at. However, I suggest that there are many other factors that need to be taken a look at. In Santa Cruz District, for example, we managed about 17% of the county lands. What's the value to the county in us providing the law enforcement, the lifeguarding services, the trails, the roads, the facilities, the removal of exotic species? I mean, these are enormous things that are going on and yet are rarely considered. The educational opportunities that take place in our nature centers, the hundreds and hundreds of school children that come through there. What is the economic benefit to the community and to the state doing those kinds of things? It's been mentioned, but you know, a lot of folks come out and use a wide variety of recreational assets in our state parks. I see my time's up. But anyway, I was going to allude to the health and physical benefits for doing that and the reduction of costs long-term because of the preventative medicine that's going on with those kinds of activities. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. And please, Dave, if obviously 2 minutes is short, but I think you have a lot to share, and please share it in writing, and we really want to hear it. Okay, it's going to be Alex Peabody, followed by Don Cooley, followed by Terry Cowan, followed by Pat Friedrich.
Do I get a green light to go?
Go.
Kind of like appearing before the Supreme Court in a way. I'm reflecting back. Oh, I did get a green light. I'm reflecting back to the first focus question, which was what's successful and what is not in having to do with funding. And I'll ask you, what do you think is the most successful outdoor recreational program that California State Parks runs? What do you think? Doesn't cost any general fund money, no dedicated budget. What do you think? Anybody? How about junior lifeguards? Junior lifeguards teach nearly 5,000 kids between the ages of 7 to 16 every summer. And this is not one day. This is for a dedicated, like, three-week period. And yet, this program, which has no dedicated funding, is currently under siege. They're operating in the black because of collections of tuition, fundraising, and donations. And leftover money is now being looked at by the districts and being used for other things other than supporting junior lifeguards. Yet, the legal wording required on the application states, I understand that all money paid to the junior lifeguard program is to be used for current program expenses as well as ongoing and future support of junior lifeguard programs. So not only do I have a specific program that you can look to as a success, but also one that is currently being under siege. And it reflects, too, on dedicated monies from budget proposals, BCPs, that have been successful, that are dedicated to specific areas of the department. And yet, 5 years later, is that money still there? And I challenge you as a commission that you should look into making sure that those monies are dedicated to the intention they were collected for.
You said how many kids and how many volunteers in the program?
There are, I'm representing myself. I'm a retired state park lifeguard supervisor now, but 5,000 kids with 16 programs from Silver Strand State Park, State Beach in San Diego County, all the way up to Half Moon Bay, including Paris Lake and Folsom Lake. We have junior lifeguard programs there. And the funds collected by their tuition pay for the seasonal lifeguards who are teaching these kids activities like to be safe. And one of the issues for kids, the second leading cause of accidental death in kids is drowning. The number one cause of death in state parks, it's drowning. The number one reason given in a survey taken of parks, what is the number one reason you came to the park? It had something to do with water. And two-thirds of our park areas in this state have recreational water in them. So.
Thank you very much, Alex. Appreciate that. Okay, we have Don Cooley, followed by Terry Corwin, followed by Pat Friedrich.
My name is Don Cooley. I'm a long-time volunteer, a long time as a horse patrol up at Año Nuevo until I couldn't get on a horse much anymore. And then for many years have been a trustee of the California State Parks Foundation, whose job, as you may know, is to raise money to help the state parks. However, I'm here speaking for myself. It has to do with the fact that a couple of years ago, it was found that your department had about $50 million in a piggy bank in the closet. And that cost a few jobs. Instead of saying, well, wow, we've been cut back all these years, here's 50 mil. But you all know what happened after that. And I have a challenge to your committee, which is to follow up on the results of that, which were that the higher management decided, fine, we'll give $22 million of that back to your department. And makes me wonder, well, why not the whole 50? They're the ones that saved the money, which was needed now. And so that is what I would suggest you do. That's small potatoes in the total budget process, of course. But it's a now thing when you're short of money in your department. And I think you ought to start doing a little dickering and maybe say, why not some more of that that we saved for you? Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Don, just a very quick response to your point. Turns out the original report of $54 million was erroneous. Out of that, $20 million really was not reported. The other $34 million really belongs to the off-highway vehicle funds, and it was public information that was not hidden. So all of the hidden funds have been returned to state parks for use.
Well, I might accept that. If my number is wrong, that it was $50 million that was found in your piggy bank.
Right.
The question I'm raising is, did somebody else have his hand in that piggy bank and had it coming to them?
Yeah, that has been audited by both the legislature and by various departments, and it was agreed to that it was only $20 million that was hidden.
The other 34 is still there, and with, as Ernest said, in the off-highway fund.
It should be yours.
It is the fees that are set aside for the off-highway road vehicle, so that is where it was supposed to be.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Don. Terry.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry Corwin. I'm the executive director with the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County, and I'd like to welcome you to Santa Cruz, John Laird's hometown. I'm so enthusiastic about this process and this commission, and I have high hopes that we're really going to put state parks on a great path forward. And I was glad to hear mention of 21st century models, sustaining models. And our little land trust has a couple of examples because we don't have any other kind of sources of funding. We have a forest that we sustainably harvest and have since 1984. We use the proceeds to take care of the forest and to keep it open to public, including dogs. And we also have a farm that we use the proceeds to restore the wetlands. And here is your previous speaker, Don Cooley, Don and Diane Cooley, granted our land trust a conservation easement on their range lands, and we have great examples of holistic grazing management on their land. So I'm hoping that this commission will, you asked for provocative ideas, will actually look at these working landscape models, not for every park. You know, we were talking about how there's every park has a different requirement, but there are ways of using these types of progressive management regimes for the health of the landscape and to create revenue. So I encourage you to take a hard look at that, and I'd love to tour the staff or commission members in any of these lands. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Okay, we have Pat Friedrich, followed by Mead Fisher, followed by Patricia Matterjack.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat Friedrich. I'm speaking as a volunteer in two parks in the Monterey area. I'm a volunteer at the Point Sur Light Station, and I'm also a volunteer at the museum store for the Cooper Malera Adobe. I'd like to speak to number three with the significant opportunities to reduce costs, and I would like to say use more volunteers. I am a stakeholder when I am a volunteer. I have ownership in the park. I'm not an employee of the state of California. I'm not paid to do a job. I'm there because I love the parks and I have ownership in it. The models that these three people talked about today are wonderful. You need to use more volunteers. The Cooper Malera Adobe will be shut down soon, most likely, because the National Trust for Historic Preservation wants to turn it into two restaurants, a music venue, and outdoor kitchens. But the state parks needs to take ownership in that because they have not allowed the Cooper Malera to be open because there are no rangers. There are any number of volunteers who would love to open the house for tours. We can be trained, we can do tours, and we create revenue. We had, a month ago, 60 people that toured the lighthouse at $12 an adult. People are willing to pay the admission fee for those kinds of things. You need to let volunteers have ownership in their state parks. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. So we have Mead Fisher, followed by Patricia Maticek, followed by Georgina Monahan, and finally Elaine Rolfes. And then we're going to actually get to, oh, looks like we have one more, and then we're going to cut off so we can stay on schedule and shift to our last topic. Please, Mead.
My name is Mead Fisher. I have a couple of comments regarding sustainable funding, the issue being partnerships. The first one I gave a summary to Melissa Johnson. A magazine, regional magazines focused on the parks, distributed among the local visitor-serving business and advertising from those businesses, which and the funding that would from the advertising would help sustain the parks. It would not sustain the parks totally, but they would bring in a source of funding, and it would also bring in more visitors. And another plan would be what I heard a thing about the young people from poor neighborhoods who can't visit the parks, partner with the local bus services where, let's say, the bus costs a dollar for the kid. For $1.50, there's a bus run that will take them into the park. The additional 50 cents is not a lot of money, but it goes to the park. The kids can afford to get to the park. And it's just one more little piece of funding. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mead. Patricia.
My name is Patricia Maticek. I appreciate your holding your very first meeting in this series here in the second smallest county in the state of California that has been said, with 13 state parks, that's 17% of the land area, so it's really an important issue for us. I'm really gratified by the comments made by your official commentators, particularly the idea of the multi-agency from city to state and federal park system integration, because the real focus has to be fulfilling the mandate of parks, which is to preserve our natural, our cultural, and historic resources. And it's really a mission for in which everyone has a role. It isn't a one-size-fits-all mission. But my comments having to do with sustainable funding are pretty brief, and sadly, they're not really very cheerful. I think you have a real crisis of confidence to address, and I think your process needs to be extremely open and transparent about money, and I urge you very, very strongly to hold out for a charter amendment for the state of California that guarantees and protects our state park system in perpetuity. We should never again be menaced by a political process that threatens to dismantle our system and throw away the resources that are important to the physical, mental, emotional health of all the residents. The citizens have voted very clearly with every park bond measure that's ever been put before the voters how strongly they feel about parks, and it's in your hands now to rebuild that confidence and build in some real safeguards to protect them for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. So we have Georgina Monahan, Elaine Rolfes, and then Julianne Burton Carvajal, and then we're going to move to our next topic. Georgina.
Hello. My name is Georgina Monahan. I'm here to talk to you about maintaining the leash law in your state parks and on state beaches. We have a beach here in Santa Cruz County that's a state beach, which no one but dog owners can use because it isn't safe for other people to go there. So I encourage you to, even though funds are tight, to increase and always have in mind the need for enforcement. we always think that we want that we will maintain our parks for their beauty and for their very presence and for posterity. But if people can't use them in safety because of off-leash dogs, then I think that's a very serious consideration. Dog owners will tell you that they're underserved as a group, but they are, I want to inform you, the only group that defecates and urinates routinely when it uses your parks and your state beaches. That's a very serious consideration. Dogs off leash create a chaotic atmosphere. There's jumping, there's barking, there's the chasing of wildlife. If we're all to use our state parks and our state beaches in safety, then off-leash dogs must be prohibited. Dogs may come on leash, but the leash law must be maintained. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Georgina. Elaine.
Thank you. My name is Elaine Rolfus. Yeah, I just had a question about when this gentleman brought up about the $54 million, and you said $34 million was for the off-highway vehicles.
Yes.
And my question is, how did they accumulate $34 million for off-highway? Where did that come from?
Off-highway vehicles is actually primarily funded by, I believe, by the way, I belong to the commission that does not oversee off-highway vehicles, so I don't have firsthand knowledge as to the funding. But my understanding is that they actually pay a licensing fee when they register their vehicles. They actually have to pay a fee, and that by mandate belongs to off-highway vehicles only. And over time, some of their funds have been used for other purposes, but really by mandate, it's not meant to be.
So they, so that accumulated through their licensing of the vehicle?
Yes, their registration fees.
I see.
It was a separate fee that when they did the audit, they found it was accountable in the right fund that was there for off-road vehicles.
Okay, thank you. Because I was looking at the Oceana Dunes thing to see that they have to pay to go to the beach down there. But the fee is like $30 a year. I mean, it's a pretty low nominal fee.
But the funds are to improve off-road vehicle parks.
Everywhere, just at the beach.
Yeah, but all throughout the state. And that fund is because that extra generation is to be put back into those specific parks.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
As Ernest said, there's a separate commission that oversees that under the...
I was just seeing how that might relate to dogs off leash at the beach, and if we had, some kind of funding, anyway.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Elaine. All right. And our final commenter on this topic will be Julianne Burton Carvajal.
You did a great job with that name. Julianne Burton Carvajal. I taught for 36 years here at UC Santa Cruz and was a resident of Monterey Lighthouse region and 15 years of Santa Cruz. And 15 years ago, I moved to Monterey where I became a historian of California. And it's in that capacity that I would like to pose a challenge, I guess, or a word of encouragement to the commissioners and everyone else who's here, because I don't think we've addressed sufficiently today. We've addressed resource issues and the great wealth that our state parks hold in trust for us in terms of natural resources, but what about the great treasure our state parks hold in trust for us in terms of the richest array of historical sites conceivable in this country, in one state? We have it here. California, and particularly the Central Coast area, focused around Monterey, and then with the gold rush, of course, San Francisco, and in the 20th century, Los Angeles, those coastal areas have been gateways to the world. And yet, somehow, as now a quasi-professional historian and exhibitions curator, around the state on the theme of California history, heritage, architecture, changes in landscape, art history, whatever, our parks
bring all that to us only to the degree that we let them and encourage them. So I want to echo an earlier statement by Sandy Hale in the first of our wonderful people who have seeded ideas here, and that is interpretation, celebrate our history, and make it known to everyone. It brings together education, diversity in spades, our contact with Asia, our Native American heritage, our relationship to Hawaii, South America, needless to say, Greater Mexico, Spain, Europe. We were and have always been diverse, always already diverse. I tell my students when I was teaching at UC Santa Cruz, California Studies, each one of you can add to the richness of the history of California by scratching the surface a little. Historians, I think we all are to some degree, make new discoveries every day. Let the parks reflect that too.
Okay, thank you very much, Julianne. So thanks again to our invited speakers, John, Andrea, and Reed. Very much appreciate your input. We're going to shift to the third theme right now. So we could invite you guys to go back. And we'd like to invite our next suite of invited speakers. And just wanted to reflect that we just appreciate the number of ideas that we received from everyone here in this last discussion. And I think it was clear that there's no silver bullet in terms of addressing the sustainable funding issue, and that the right mix of funding will definitely depend on the park and paying attention to what those niches for success are and building upon what works and finding models that are being used elsewhere that can be incorporated into parks. And we've heard that volunteers have been working well, other partnerships as well, and that all this needs to be overlaid with transparency. So thanks for that. We're going to now shift to our final theme, which I think we had some folks comment on the importance of partners and partnerships with regard to funding, and now we want to address this topic even more specifically now. And the overarching question with regard to partnership that we wanted to pose and invite folks to respond to here is, what are the opportunities for improving and or expanding use of alternative operating arrangements that could enhance visitor experiences while improving long-term financial sustainability of state parks? And then within that, we had a couple of focus questions that we also wanted to share and invite you to respond to. The first is, what is working and what is not working in existing park operating partnerships and cooperative management arrangements in your region? So we'd love to hear about what's going on here along the northern part of the Central Coast. Secondly, what are the most appropriate roles and functions for partners to perform relating to operations of state parks? And then finally, what can state parks do to better support and manage effective operating partnerships? So we're interested to hear both what you think the appropriate roles for partners are, but also what can state parks do better in their relationships with partners? So with that, we have again invited three guest speakers to come share their initial thoughts on this. We have Dave Holland, who's the Assistant County Manager for San Mateo County Department of Parks. We have Walter Moore, who's the President of the Peninsula Open Space Trust. And finally, Bonnie Holly, who's the Executive Director of Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks. And I thought maybe we'd start with Walter and then move up the line again. And again, we're aiming for 4 minutes here. And would love to hear your thoughts, especially as they pertain to some of these questions, which, you know, we're really thinking about. What are the things that is most important to be sharing with the Parks Board Initiative right now?
Great. Thank you very much. My organization, for the last 36 years, has helped to protect over 73,000 acres of open space, farms, and parkland in and around Silicon Valley. And so I wanted to take my time here, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak, to reflect about our local experiences on the ground with what's working, what's not, and some of our suggestions in that regard. What's working? For quite some time now, almost a decade, our local area district superintendent, Chet Bardo, has been part of committed to a peninsula working group. That is a group of agencies that include state parks, the National Park Service, Post, San Mateo County Parks, and the Coastal Conservancy. And that may not sound like much to come together to meet quarterly, It's a big effort. It's a big commitment. And what it means to the department is a demonstration by state parks that they are committed to, at least in our area, to trying to work on and develop these partnerships to another level. And in fact, it has established the foundation for us. We are now going out and seeking funding to allow us to assess and implement cross-jurisdictional management of some of our lands. So it is starting to pay off. The second, what's working, is at Portola Redwoods State Park. The closures was a pretty awful time for a lot of places, and there was a silver lining, and that was that many of us, and in fact happened at Portola Redwoods State Park, came out of the woodwork to help make sure these parks stayed open. And there was a collection of us, the Parks Foundation is represented here, the Save the Redwoods and Post have raised quite a lot of money to keep Portola Redwoods State Park. So the silver lining, if there was one on all of that, was it brought outside energy, ideas, and funding. So the next question, what are the most appropriate roles and functions for partners? Partners can bring an outside perspective and an overview. For example, at Portola Redwoods State Parks, we're helping develop a business plan for that park to help it become more self-sufficient. In fact, we've already helped analyze this is really on-the-ground stuff and examples, but they had a septic system there that's antiquated, and they had an estimate of $4 million to get it replaced. We had that analyzed, and we think we've developed a more efficient, effective one that could be done for $700,000. So there are efforts that outside sources can do to bring resources, you've heard about it earlier, of funding and other resources and donors to these activities. I wanted to end off with your last question, which is a very important one. What can state parks do to better support and manage effective operating partnerships? One of the really discouraging on-the-ground issues we ran into when we were trying to help keep Portola Redwoods State Parks open was the lack of coordination between the local and state representatives of state parks. And one of the most prominent ways that this was brought out was it took them months, if not half a year, just to come up with what it costs to run this unit of state parks. And that may not sound like a big issue to us, but when you're on the ground trying to raise money for a park, trying to get people motivated, you need to know those numbers. And you need to be motivated by the fact that, okay, here's what you have, here's what you need, here's what needs to be done. And when your partner can't even come up with that number, it makes you discouraged. It also makes you distrust your partner and their ability to play their partnership role. You also need to create a welcoming culture. I don't know if it's, I think I would react the same way if I had had my budget cut for over three decades. I would hunker down. I would close my arms. I would keep whatever food I'm getting for myself. And I would not be inviting other people. And I think there is a culture and spirit in state parks that needs to be turned around and make it a welcoming one. And you ask for models of this. I think one of the best possible models you could look at is what Brian O'Neill did before he passed away at the Golden Gate National Recreation Area with his partner, Gordon Moore, at the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy. They have hundreds of volunteers that help create one of the most visited, most popular parks in the world, and you could start there and do a lot worse than modeling that. So I want to thank you again for allowing me to speak. I believe this initiative is a critical step in state parks evolving once again into the proud standard of state park systems it should be, given the remarkable resources it stewards.
Thank you very much, Walter. Okay. So our next guest speaker is Bonnie Hawley. She's the Executive Director of Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks.
Thank you. First, I want to welcome you to the Central Coast, where we love our state parks and beaches. Our parks feature amazing things. We have redwood forests, windswept beaches, a monarch butterfly preserve, Native American archaeological resources, historic adobes, a Victorian dairy ranch, and even a World War I era cement ship that now serves as a bird sanctuary. Santa Cruz County has more state parks and beaches than any other county in California, and Friends is very proud to support them. Our parks also enjoy tremendous public support, with Proposition 21, the State Parks Initiative, garnering a staggering 68% of the vote here, which was the highest in the state of California. The public support finds rich voice in a community of nonprofit organizations that partner with state parks to sustain the legacy of our local state parks and beaches, and this room is full of those people today. The Mountain Parks Foundation, Waddell Creek Association, Advocates for the Forest of Nicene Marks, Coastside State Parks Association, Trailworkers.com, the Portola Castle Rock Foundation, Save the Redwoods League, Semper Virens Fund, as well as Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks, and those are just the local organizations. Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks is an entrepreneurial nonprofit that's been working to sustain the legacy of our state parks and beaches since 1976. Through an innovative partnership with California State Parks and by leveraging local community support, Friends has provided millions of dollars of funding for educational programs, visitor services, and capital projects. Throughout decades of declining funding from the state and increasing visitor attendance, Friends has developed a unique and highly successful partnership model with state parks that enables us to provide visitor service staffing and fee collection at park entrance stations. We've been in this partnership with state parks for the past 26 years, and we're investing 100% of our net proceeds back into our local parks. We call it the Friends model. The Friends model significantly extends the reach of state parks in the area of education and interpretation, capital improvements, park maintenance, and public safety. We leverage strong local support from business partners and Friends members to fund programs and projects. And our 5,746 Friends on Facebook are an engaged and active community in support of our mission. Proceeds from sales at 5 Friends park stores, which reflect each park's educational and interpretive themes, also support park programs and improvements. As the fortunes of state parks have declined, the legislature has indicated the desire for more entrepreneurial practices and the development of incentive-based strategies at the local level. The Friends model has proven over the last 26 years and is consistent with the concept expressed by the Little Hoover Commission and others for innovation, enterprise-driven, truly incentive-based models. Working with state parks, Friends has developed cutting-edge online tools that balance great customer service with maximum revenue generation. The Friends model keeps money local and adds to it through our various enterprises and enables us to fund education and interpretive services provided by state employees, improve the physical condition of our parks, provide 100% of the funding for operation of an online learning program for public school students across California, support one of the largest volunteer operations in the state of California, and to drive key projects on behalf of state parks, such as restoration of the historic Castro Adobe. Our strong partnership with state parks has enabled another recent notable success. Less than a mile from where we're sitting here today sits the Santa Cruz Mission State Historic Park. A little over a year ago, the park, which features the oldest building in Santa Cruz, was faced with outright closure. But the community rallied, and Friends saved the park from closure. We entered into an early donor agreement with the state, and Friends is now funding state park rangers, maintenance, in addition to the state park interpreters we were already funding. But we went beyond just keeping the doors open. Not only do thousands of school kids continue to learn about California history while visiting the park, but also due to strong local support, Friends has funded an extra open day at the park, accommodating even more school field trips. And due to local creativity and initiative and our outstanding partnership with state parks, the Santa Cruz Mission State Historic Park has been transformed into a vibrant community event venue and cultural asset. The park now hosts outside community events such as local business mixers and nonprofit fundraisers. And we're just now wrapping up our Mission Summer Series, which featured outdoor movie screenings, First Friday art and music events, and we're culminating the season with a mole and mariachi festival on October 5th, which I invite you all to attend. Our partnership is real and it works. It's based on mutual respect, that's born from a state agency and a nonprofit, each doing what they do best with the shared goal of making our local parks and beaches the best they can be. Our partnership is nimble, responsive, and continuously improved with new innovations being developed each year. My fervent hope for the Parks Forward process is that all of the creative, locally relevant initiatives and partnerships happening across California will get the support and the authority they need to continue to flourish and be replicated when possible. This will be a challenge in these times when the understandable reaction of the department and the legislature would be to regiment, standardize, and homogenize to gain further control of park operations in the hope of avoiding even the hint of future scandal. As State Parks continues to struggle with long-term funding and seeks to develop new ways to deliver on its mission to provide for the health, inspiration, and education of the people of California, the Friends model provides a successful local example of innovation, partnership, and stewardship on behalf of State Parks, and we look forward to continuing to work together to build the foundation for a sustainable future for State Parks. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. And finally, our last invited guest is Dave Holland, the Assistant County Manager from San Mateo County Department of Parks.
Good afternoon. Am I on?
Yep. You are on.
It's good to be here. I'm the Assistant County Manager for San Mateo County. I was the Parks Director for 7 years. And I just wanted to say at the front, I moved here 8 years ago after working all over the country, and this state and this area especially that we live in is very unique. When I look at the peninsula that I'm on, there's 75% of it is open space. I mean, we are really blessed, and it's not just open grass, it's very diverse. When we look at the state park system, it is the most incredible park system in the country, and it does define the quality of life we have here. So I would hope the challenge to the commission is, this isn't the first time we've had a look at this issue. Let's really have a bias for action and make something happen out of that. I think what's different is we've had kind of a sea change in where we're at. Before, we would have analyzed it. We would have looked at the economics. We would have done much of what we've been talking about. But I think with the recession we went through, we really are positioned. When I say we, I mean all the park systems, but especially state parks, as a leader, to make a difference by pulling partnerships together and really looking at how we leverage resources. So what's working? And I'll build a little bit on Walter's points, because I also have been on the Peninsula Work Group, and we've done some pretty incredible work. We're just in the early stages of our journey. We came out with a real nice brochure. It only took 8 months. So maybe there's a way we can cooperate a little quicker on things we share in common. But we've had a lot of good leadership from State Parks. Dave Vinson is up there. He was on the, hi Dave, he's on the original Peninsula Work Group when we started up. Chet has really done a lot of the work and been an excellent partner. And especially as we all try to work around the Devil's Slide area, which is huge and has several jurisdictions working there. But on other areas, as simple as looking at trail connections, as we tried to put together in the county Bay to Ocean trails, State Parks has been a great cooperator. Other areas are, you know, mostly around shared common constituents that are trying to help us do our job better. We share a lot of them. But as I look at the roles and what's changing, the roles for partners and agencies and friends group are really just evolving coming out of this downturn we've had. And they're roles that need to look at expanding, letting everybody in the door, and using the ideas and truly leveraging the resources. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But those roles are for looking at non-traditional solutions that involve everybody. There are certain roles, and the agencies are going to have to define that in state parks as well, of what are the core roles, health, safety, enforcement, that we have to look at. But then there are a lot of other areas where maybe we don't need to hold on to the reins so tight. What can we do better? First, kind of three general thoughts. First, it's always about money. And closing a government gap in funding toward maintenance and management of the parks. And, you know, I've been in this business 40 years. I would say we have one good year out of every decade that we get funded well. That's not sustainable. There's got to be a better framework for that. And so if there isn't more money, we've got to find a better way to do it. And that brings us to a second point of, it's a huge change that we're going to have to go through and looking at efficiency and accountability. Efficiency being getting more people at the table and looking at how we do things, not how do we do it cheaper and do less of it. And accountability being how transparent are we going to be about what we're doing. Which brings me to a philosophy that I think is going to need to change. And I can speak from county parks, but I've observed it with state parks. I've observed it with the federal government where I worked before. How are decisions made? Who are the decision makers? I think the transition we're in is looking at whatever that word control meant before. We got to give it up and find a better answer. And we've got to look at bringing everybody to the table and bringing early on and giving everybody a role and responsibility in the answer. So things we can do better, and let's be less insular about solving issues. There are many of us out there, and that's a habit. I think we're moving toward it, but it's a habit. Get us all at the table. And I know I've been one of the first. You're sitting there in a public meeting, and everybody's telling you the answer, and you just want to go back, as Walter said, when you don't have much food, and hunker down and find an answer that's manageable, but we're long past that now. Have a bias for action. I think on that issue, all of us as agencies, state parks included, we get working in our own sphere, and we have our own process that sometimes in a public agency takes forever. I think Madison set it up that way. But if we look at the issue around the marsh in Pescadero, it took 10-plus years. Shame on us. It shouldn't have taken that long. There's a lot of good expertise and talent out there, but rather than each entity fighting the other one or trying to see who was controlling it, we should have got an answer for the environment much sooner. We need to share and trade resources better, and I'll start from a fairly cursory level. For county parks and state parks, we both drive garbage trucks up and down the coast. Maybe one entity could do that. That's pretty simple. It's not simple to get to, but it's simple. We have an RCD there, that a resource conservation district that has resource managers. State parks has scientists. County parks doesn't have any. Certainly there's a nexus there where we could share that talent so we could support having a critical mass. We need a bit of partnershiping for strength. We've talked a lot about how we can share, but I think it's a very area by area by area deal. It defines one size does not fit all. I know the government likes that, but one size does not fit all. And so we should be looking at different ways we can do things. If I look at the coast, where county parks, state parks, post, mid-peninsula open space, and us share areas, I don't know that we all have a common view of what we want to get done, especially around sustainable agriculture. And that's something we could work on, and that does steward the lands and generate revenue. So there are a number of ways to do things that we could do better. Just to kind of tie it up quickly, I think there's an opportunity, and Walter alluded to this earlier in talking about what we're trying to do with the Peninsula Work Group, looking at a larger management construct across the Santa Cruz Mountains, where we can look at, do we all have a broad common stewardship goal that we can all contribute to underneath? And work out the agreements, work out the management agreements, the memorandums of understanding, all the process we all have to deal with, but try to come to an overall view of how we're going to manage and then look at the resources we have. And I think there's a lot of opportunity right now. I think as you go through this process, you're going to see a lot of different ways to do that across the state. And I hope we just get a bias for action and to get to somebody's comment I heard coming in. I hope we can get those state parks people so they don't have to look at the toilet and they can look at the customer coming through the door and they're well supported. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave. Okay, so we do want to open it up to other comments from other members of the audience here, and I have three on the list right now. I have Randy Widera, followed by Lydia Turner, followed by Monica Hudson.
And Walt and Dave and Bonnie, one of the things we've heard a lot about is what San Francisco had done and continues to do in their partnership. And what can we learn from that? What low-hanging fruit could we grab and immediately put in our process?
Allow your partners to bring in the resources to get the process started and get it going, because I think that's what's been the value of our long-term Peninsula Working Group, is that we've established the relationships, we have the on-the-ground trust, and now a private partner like POSE can work with the foundations and others to get the financing that you need to get the assessment done so you can get the implementation happening and find funding for that.
Hey, thanks, Walter. Okay, Randy Widera.
Hi there, I'm Randy Widera. I'm a principal of a small consulting firm that's based here in Santa Cruz County that specializes in working with the partners of California State Parks and other nonprofits. And I'm fortunate in through all this in the last 2 years that I get to work with all the silver linings. And really, to Mr. Moore's comment, that there have been some silver linings. And the first thing that I'd like to say to the commission and to everyone, I really believe, after being associated with State Parks as a partner for 25 years, that so many of the solutions that you are seeking are evolving right now and happening in the field. And I am so glad that you reached out to State Park employees and you engaged them and you've engaged all that. A few things, and just to focus in on these silver linings, my work takes me working with POST and Portola Castle Rock on this business plan. I've worked with over 25 of the nonprofits that are operating or who have been working to donate to these parks. I'm currently working with the California State Parks Foundation on developing a study of the impact that you're seeing across the board on all these nonprofits that have stepped up. It's staggering to see how this crisis has changed the face of the nonprofits, how they have stepped up, how they have gained capacity. One of the key elements, and there's been many good comments that have been put out here, but I really subscribe to the work of Elena Olmsted, who was a PhD and Nobel Prize laureate in economics, and she talked about how the commons and about how to give local communities and local agencies the resources and authority to operate. You have some great state parks folks that work in all the districts. When these partnerships are working, these silver linings are happening because they are taking chances, because they are being given responsibility and authority. As you work on your recommendations within state parks, make sure to recognize that your local district superintendents and their staffs are really the ones that support these, and to really give them that responsibility, authority, and resources to get into those partnerships, because they are the ones who are really making it happen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Lydia Turner.
I'm Lydia Turner. I work for State Parks, but I do not represent them. I'm just stating my own personal opinion. Oftentimes, we have a neighbor that we look at somewhat critically, whether they're new or they've been there for many years, right? Who lives there and what are they doing? Well, the minute their house catches on fire, we're the ones who are running over and giving them some food and giving them some blankets and making sure they have a place to go. And that's really what I have seen. I've only been with parks for a little while. But when it went into this critical state, all these neighbors came and said, hey, I love that park. You can't close my park. What can we do to save this park? And so that's been important, because a lot of times while we might have observed and not got involved, now we said, hey, I'm going to get involved because I really do care. And so thank you. Thank you for all the partners, all the individuals who really have stepped up, because we see their love and their passion. Well, you know, I see that at the very big parks, there are a lot of volunteers. But what about the small parks? Can we encourage some of these partners and some of these volunteers to say, okay, we're so happy that you're willing to give this much time to Onyetuevo, to Pigeon Point Lighthouse, to all these very nice big parks. But would you be willing to give an hour or two to one that nobody can name? It's just as important. It's just as precious. Its resources are needed. And some of them are even free to get into. There's no money involved. But they're very important. And can we get our schools and our kids, perhaps, to volunteer and come and do whatever they're willing to do?
Okay. Thank you, Lydia. Monica Hudson, followed by Steve Dennis, followed by Lynn Paulson.
Thank you again. I spoke earlier as a volunteer of many of the parks that we have around Monterey County, and also as a retired state park employee on the funding and keeping the funds in those parks that are generated by special events. I'd like to speak on behalf of myself. I'm the operator, since I retired from parks, of California Legacy Tours, a walking tour company. And I do give walking tours in two areas where we have state parks. And I want to touch on Walter's comments and the experience that private contractors often face with state parks, the difficulty in their permit process, the extremely unwelcoming attitude that we often face. I was very surprised after having been on the inside, now to be on the outside. And I understand that they do need to find their way for a permit process that never existed before. Took me 2 years to get a permit for one of the parks. I have been unable to get one for Monterey State Historic Park. I do give tours there, because it's within the city. But I will bring executives from Google and Bechtel and UBS, any financial, you name them, insurance companies from all over the world. And when we walk through the streets of Monterey, and there is a beautiful garden that happens to have a gate that gets closed at 5 o'clock, because I do not have a permit, which I cannot get, I'm unable to take those people to those gardens. There has to be a better way, and we need to work together to provide that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Monica. So, Steve Dennis.
Hi, I'm Steve Dennis. I term limited off the Point Lobos Foundation board, but they've hooked me into chairing the general plan committee. We're in the process of a general plan for four of our state parks. Before I start my talks, I want to personally recognize Ken. Many of you may not know that Ken was the executive director of the Marine Life Protection Initiative, which resulted in a network of marine protected areas along the entire coast of California. It is an international model for success, and the people of California and the Blue Ribbon Commission, everyone who's involved in that, should be thanked publicly for the great work that they did. And it certainly heartens me, and I'm sure the rest of people in this room, of your role in this effort. And if this is anywhere near as successful as that, it's going to be fabulous. And I want to encourage you not to forget, as you go through your process, the underwater portion of many of our state parks. At Point Lobos, we have an amazing underwater park, and we have a diver community. There's revenue sources there. I won't get into that. But there's great opportunities to do a better job in terms of integrating the underwater portion of our state parks. I wanted to talk a little bit about partnering with the, I'm not sure exactly the number, there's 70 or 80 cooperative associations throughout California. Bonnie talked eloquently about the great success of Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks. At the Point Lobos Foundation, we've funded $200,000 to build a new Dosen Center. We've funded the architectural and work for some of the most beautiful ADA-compliant parks in California. And recently, we have raised $250,000 in a matching grant to do a general plan. And in going through the general plan process, it has gotten hopelessly bogged down in a morass of bureaucracy and frustrations. And I encourage you and I encourage the initiative here to look very carefully at the general plan process. It's too long, it's too expensive, it's too cumbersome. In order to move some of these parks and the work that we need forward, we need a much better job on our general plans. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Steve. Lynn Paulson?
Yeah, I'm Lynn Paulson, and I'm speaking this time on behalf of the Sierra Club, as I'm a member of the Committee on California State Parks. And we thought it was very interesting to hear the speakers talk about the cross-jurisdictional management of the parks and the Friends model and the having broad common stewardship goals. And as we believe, as the commission is looking into this, you'll be looking at many public-private partnerships, and including continued and additional use of concessionaires. But we want to make sure that the contracts are set up and managed properly, because we have seen some examples in other districts where there was the concessionaire contracts where it had misreported financial information, lack of compliance with the terms of the contract, and inadequate audits. So any new contracts that you're setting up, they must be very carefully written and managed to make sure that both the public and the parks resources benefit from them. Thank you.
I want to ask you a question. Do you have some you mentioned that are working right and that you liked? Do you want to point those out? Or
We've just unfortunately seen some in another district that did not work out right.
So. But are there some that are working right that you could? You're more concerned about the ones that aren't working right.
Right, but we'll send you a longer letter.
Well, that's good, and that is a point of a lot of this is that we can stimulate thought and get more written comment, because that will be helpful to our commission when you can say not only what we should be avoiding but what we should be encouraging would be helpful.
Good, thank you. So I think that's all I had in terms of the speaker. Oh, one more. Come on down. Come on down. I think you may be our... Oh, I'm sorry, Drew. Is this Drew?
Yes.
Oh, Drew, thank you. You were the first and the last card to be submitted. So, Drew Perkins.
Yes, my name is Drew Perkins. I am a board member of the Mountain Bikers of Santa Cruz, which is a local nonprofit here in Santa Cruz that promotes and advocates mountain biking and trail construction. And I wanted to talk to you guys about my experience as a volunteer in state parks and some examples that I've seen work really great, and then my experience that I've had here. I'm really happy that you guys are going to San Luis Obispo, I think, on Wednesday. There's a great partnership there between an equestrian group, the Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers, and state parks. They have been building amazing trails at Montana de Oro State Park, rerouting old legacy eroding ranch roads that were, you know, repurposed as trails. And I think that if you're looking for a model that other parks could use with cooperation and engagement with different stakeholders that love their trails, that is a great place to look at. So I just want to kind of talk about the experiences I've had since moving up here. Our group has recently built a two-mile trail with the city parks, 3,400 volunteer hours in the last year. And we've approached state parks about doing reroutes on some trails in Wilder, and we've had almost no engagement. We check in with them every couple months, and there's no movement. It's either environmental, but just there's not the resources there to engage this volunteer community that's out there and willing to work. And so I would encourage you guys to look at how state parks more programmatically can engage volunteers to take care of a lot of this maintenance backlog, especially with regard to trails, because there's a lot of people out there who love trails, who are willing to work on them, but if there's not any leadership from the park staff to get the volunteers there, it doesn't happen. I just mentioned the state did two reroutes in Wilder in the last couple of years, and volunteers have been doing maintenance for years. Didn't even know they were happening. So there wasn't that connection between engaging those volunteers as stakeholders, being involved with the projects. State Parks was just moving, staff was just moving out on its own. not engaging those people who love the trails and work on them. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Drew. So just one more speaker card for, I think, Desiree Gant. And I think you'll be our last speaker, and then we'll close this part of the plenary.
Okay, thank you so much. Sorry, I was like a little late. Anyways, my name is Desiree Gant, and I work at the Web of Life Field School at Little Basin, which is a public-private partnership, thank you, Randy, that is kind of this new thing that we tried between Peninsula Open Space Trust, Semper Virens, the state parks, and the nonprofit concessionaire that we work for, UCCR. So we are a partnership that is working. We're really excited. Our main focus is program-based, and so we've brought a lot of schools out to Little Basin and opened up this land that was once privately owned. And so we're pretty pumped on the partnership aspect of working together with state parks. They've been open to a whole bunch of new ideas. Chet's been really great and allowing us to kind of share our vision, and it matches and coincides really well with the state parks mission. So I just wanted to say that there are some things out there. They're working great, so thank you, and good luck.
All right. Thank you, Desiree. So one reflect that as with the sustainable funding, lots of, I think, interesting, innovative ideas here, including the importance of bringing everybody to the table, recognizing partnerships as a two-way street, and that both sides of the partnership have to work for it to be successful. The importance about looking for non-traditional and creative solutions, the importance of transparency, again, hearing this idea of one size doesn't fit all, and you may have to look at partnerships at a park-by-park basis. And then finally, the idea around empowering the partners, and that if this is going to work, that you need to allow all the good that can happen to happen. So that's some of what we heard. Very much appreciate your input here. We want to move into some closing remarks and recognize that at 5 we wanted to finish with the plenary. But if those of you who have additional questions or who want to speak with park staff, we will have some stations and we'll do an open house until 5:30. So I'll describe that in just a moment. But first, I want to maybe offer to Ernest or Ken any closing remarks before I talk next steps.
As this is the very first public workshop, we really did not know what to expect, and I must say that this has been very, very successful. It's exactly what we were looking for. And thank you. Thank you so much for your very constructive and thoughtful comments. But more so, thank you for your dedication to and your love of the parks. And that's really what's going to take to sustain and keep our parks thriving for generations to come. Thank you.
I can just second what Ernest said. This has just been great to see all the engagement. I'm hoping we're as fortunate in the other 9 places around the state as we have been in Santa Cruz. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ken. So I just want to talk some next steps. Right up on the screen right now, there is the little table showing the upcoming public workshops. You guys were first. We have Fresno tomorrow and San Luis Obispo on Wednesday. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll be in Eureka, San Rafael, and Auburn. So Eureka on the 30th of September, a Monday, San Rafael on Wednesday, October 2nd, and Auburn on Thursday, October 3rd. And then into the Southern California region, San Diego on October 14th, Inland Empire on the 15th, Orange County on the 16th, and Santa Monica on the 17th. And we don't have venues yet for them.
And that's incorrect. We had said started Santa Monica. That should be downtown Los Angeles. We had moved that to make sure that we connected with the underserved population. So that is an old slide. But we're looking at probably the Cathedral downtown is what we're headed for.
All right, excellent. We'll fix that. Question about this?
Is there a closing date for written comments?
Is there a closing time for written comments?
No, when you look at our schedule of our commission meetings, our first commission meeting is going to be on the 18th, and then we will have one in November where we'll start looking at models.
And I think in probably in February and April, we're going to try to have some drafts that you can respond to. And you can inform, obviously, anytime on the front end, but it will probably be in that April May time frame where we're trying to have a final draft out that people can comment to, so in the August timeline we can make a final report to the governor.
So in terms of the open house, that we have different stations. Right over here is station number 4, and if you have additional questions about the Parks Forward initiative and would like to get those answered, both Ken and Cedric will be there. Outside in the hallway, we have 3 other stations, and you'll see just a flip chart up on the wall there. The station 1 is Future Success, and there you can talk to Ernest. Station 2 will be partner sustainable funding, and that will be Michelle manning that. And then station 3 is partnerships, and Melissa will be there. So again, this is informal, but would love to speak more with you. Oh, yeah. So we actually have sticky notes out there, too. So if you do have, this is a good segue, if you do have additional comments, you can fill out the comment forms and hand those in to us. If you did have an additional idea that you'd wanted to make sure was captured at the workshop, you can also write it on a sticky note and put it up on the flip chart out there so that others who are in that station interested in the same topic can see your comment as well. And here is just a final slide saying how comments can be submitted over the coming days, weeks, and months. You can do it from the website. If you just go there, there's a comments submittal form that is very easy to fill out. You can also send in an email. And Melissa,
Just quickly about the email address, that info, it will be live as of tomorrow. We're moving over from personal email addresses to a Parks Forward address. So if you try today and it doesn't work, it's okay. All right, try again tomorrow.
So message for folks who are watching online, the info at parksforward.com will be live tomorrow, and you can submit comments that way. And then finally, you can submit comments via U.S. Postal Service, and you can even take home the comment form you have now and send that in by mail later on. So with that, we really appreciate everybody's participation today and really are grateful for your heartfelt comments and your passion about parks. So thank you, and we convene to the open house.